Welcome to Tosfos Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Basra Daf Lamed Aleph. We'll begin at the top line. Ze Omer Shel Avosai V'Achalti Shnei Chazaka V'Ze Omer Shel Avosai. Two parties arguing with each other over ownership of property. One claiming this was my father's and I have been here for 3 years, and the other one says this land was my father's. Notice no mention of chazaka though. V'hai aisi sadi da'avosehi, v'hai aisi sadi da'ochlo shnei chazaka. One brings witnesses indicating that it was his father's, and the other one brings witnesses testifying to his presence there for 3 years. So who should we benefit here? Omar Rabba. Rabba says regarding the second fellow, who's the one who brought witnesses that he was there for 3 years, Ma loy l'shaker. Why should we think that he is lying? In other words, we should prefer him, he who brought witnesses to the chazaka. And as far as his claim that it was his father's, we should believe him. Why should he lie? He would have a better taina, a stronger claim that we would have believed. E boy omale, he could have said minoch zavinta v'chaltia shnei chazaka. I bought the land directly from you, and I have been here for 3 years. And for the 3 years, he has witnesses. So, and that would have been a winning claim. So that it's clear, as far as Rabba is concerned, that we should prefer the one who has witnesses for his chazaka, for his presence there and use of the land for 3 years. Omar le Abaye. Abaye responds to Rabba and says that this is not an acceptable claim that we call a migu or mali l'shaker. Why should we not believe him because he had a better claim? Not so over here. Mali l'shaker b'mokoyim eidim lo aminon. His initial claim, this we'll call him the Bayes man. He is the one that said the first fellow who appeared in the Gemara at the very top line, he is the one that said, it was my father's and I've used it for years of chazaka. Abaye says the initial claim of it was my father's is up against witnesses that said it was the other guy's father's. So a claim, an initial claim that's up against witnesses, doesn't allow his claim to get off the ground. That's called mali l'shakir, or in other words, migu b'mokim eidim, a claim in the presence of witnesses that counters your initial claim. Hodar omar le. Now the story with these two fellows arguing with one another continues. The one that had the witnesses for his chazaka continues and says, "In davoscha he, I concede it was your father's, v'zavanta minayhu, and I bought it from them. V'hai de'amri loch davosi." And that I said in my initial claim that it was my father's, and of course, that was the problematic clause before. It's not a problem, he says. Desomichli Allah kidavosi. I was reliant upon and secure upon my ownership of the land as if it were my father's. So, initially, he said it was my father's. Then as time goes on, he said, no, it's really your father's, but I bought it from them, and I was so secure upon the land, so secure and confident of my ownership of the land as if it was my father's. Is that legitimate? I should say, in other words, he's improving the initial claim of Shel Avosai. Toein v'chozer v'toein o ein toein v'chozer v'toein. Is he entitled to this, to have made an initial claim, and then, we'll say, refurbish the claim on a second stage? That's toein, initial claim, and then chozer v'toein, then makes a second claim that, as I say, refurbishes, upgrades the initial claim. Ula Omar Toin v'chozer v'toin. Ula says that that's okay, that we can accept that. And since he had witnesses testifying to his chazaka, and in this case, as far as Ula is concerned, his initial point that was my father's is like re-explained, we accept that. We take a look at the Rashbam, a few lines down from here. Ula Omar Toin v'chozer v'toin. Toin bebeizdin mashu roitze. V'chozer acherei chen litoin dvorim acherim litaretz dvorim rishonim, to straighten out, to answer, straighten out for his initial words. And here the Rashbam is very careful. Is afapi shemakhisham ktsas bozeh shechozer v'toin hai de'omar davosi, even though he's a little bit contradicting that which he initially said, that it was my father's, but he's explaining it. As far as Ula is concerned, that's legitimate. However, there's another opinion in the Gemara. Nardo yamri eino toein v'chozer v'toein. As we go on in the Gemara, we encounter some new markings. You see we have the note on the side, the topic heading. Let's read our note. No say. Hatoyen chozer v'toyen olo. Hatoyen shalavosai v'hifsid. Person who made a claim, as far as Abaye is concerned, that was a losing claim because it was up against witnesses. V'achar kach toan shalavosecha v'konisi oisimem v'hodi amarti shalavosai v'somach li alo ki'ilu shalavosai. And my initial claim simply meant that I was secure on the land as if it were my father's. Ha'im hu yochol lachsiv litoyen kach olo. Is that acceptable? Now, we had already seen a double underline, and under our structural note, these are dugmoy shel tainis shnias. These are examples of second claims, additional claims. We already saw how the first one figured, and we said, by the way, there was a number one in a diamond, and that's, as we just saw, shonu b'machlokes. That was the subject of a disagreement between Ula and Nardoi. Can he be chozer v'toein in that fashion? The next example we'll see is effective according to all opinions. So now let's go on in the Gemara. The crown marking highlights umode, where someone concedes. So we continue now in the Gemara. Umodi Ula. Ula, who was lenient with regard to the claimer, Ula concedes hecha di omar lei, where the initial claim was shel avosai velo shel avosecha. If he says this land was my father's and it was not your father's, dieno toin v'chozer v'toin, he can't then refurbish that claim and saying no, it really was your father's, but I was secure on it, because by saying initially velo shel avosecha, he ruled out any further discussion on that. Another point that Ula is made on, the hecha to have koi beidina, a case where a litigant is in court, velotan, and remained quiet, didn't advance a claim, v'yosa me avroi v'toan, and then he comes from outside and makes a claim, eino chozer v'toin. He cannot then say, make the second claim. Let's go over that point again, where he was initially present in Beis Din, and he while he was in Beis Din, he didn't make the refurbished claim. Walked out of Beis Din. Of course, this is all after his initial claim of Shelavosai v'chalti shni chazoka. he didn't refurbish that while in Beis Din, walked outside, came back in, and then made that new claim. That, even Ula will say, is not acceptable. Take a look at the Rashbam toward the end of the narrow line, the third to last narrow line. He says, Umoidi Nami Ula, Ula also concedes, Ula, who was, we said, was lenient before, will also concede in the direction of restriction, Kol Hechod Avikoy Beidino, as long as he was standing in court with Lotan Tikun Vorma Rishonim and did not advance his refurbished claim, but rather he walked outside and then went back into the court and upgraded his initial claim. There, notice that expression that we saw before in the Rashbam, where you find a little bit of a contradiction, as we saw earlier. That's not acceptable when he makes that upgraded claim after having been outside and coming back. Now, we turn back to the Gemara. My taima, why is that unacceptable? Ta nosei agmere, we suspect that his friends and relatives, they taught him, they trained him in what to say. And it's not, in other words, that's what we suspect, and we are basically ruling out that what he's saying is really the truth, that it was, as he says, it was the other guy's father's, but he bought it from him and was secure on it as if it was from his father's. No, that never happened. Umodu Nahardoi, the one that made the claim initially that it's my father's, Nahardoi had been restrictive before in preventing him from making the upgraded claim or not accepting the upgraded claim. Nahardoi will concede Heichod Yomar Lei Shel Avosai. Notice here he repeats what he initially said, that it was my father's, but he adds shelokhuha me'avosecha dechozer v'toin, where he initially said it was my father's and I've been here for the years of Chazoka. And we noted at the beginning of the Gemara the other guy had witnesses that it was his father's, and Abaye said, well, how can you rely on the guy that has witnesses only for Chazoka when his claim was it was my father's and I've been here for years of Chazoka, which ran up against the witnesses claiming it was the other guy's father's? However, that fellow who did not have witnesses for his own father, if he says it was my father's who bought it from your father's, with that, he's not contradicting the other guy's witnesses. He's acknowledging that it was the other guy's father's land. But he's simply adding new information that it was my father's that bought it from your father's. The chozer v'toing, that is acceptable. You'll notice, in this case, there's no contradiction of original words, no partial contradiction. He's continuing with his claim that it was his own father's. Just adding now that they had bought it from your fathers. Another point that Nahardoi concedes on, Vehecha Dishtoi Mili Avroi Lebeisdin Velotoan, where you have a litigant speaking outside of Beisdin concerning his properties and doesn't make that claim, the Osul Beidin of Vetoan, and then comes into Beisdin and makes that claim. That is okay. The Chozer V'toy. Now, let us take a look in the Rashbam, in the lower part of the Daf. Umodinami Nardoi Kol Hechot Dishtoi Mivi Vroi Mevroi LeBeidino Kedem Shtuan Klum BeBeisdin. A litigant that talks before he ever entered Beis Din, he speaks outside, and before he made any court claims, internal court claims, for lo toan ma shutoin achshov beBeis Din, and when he was outside, he didn't say what he's saying now in the court. The also the beidina v'toan tainus sha'ikrois legamri ezarishonos, and now he says things that totally uproot his original words. And my understanding is his original words that he said before he ever entered Beis Din. The chozer v'toin, that's okay. Now the Gemara explains this behavior, where on the one hand, when he was outside of Beis Din, he was saying all kinds of things, and then walks into Beis Din and makes claims that are totally against, totally uproot his original external claims. Why is this okay? Answer: Ovid Inish Dolomagli Tanose Elo Labedina. It's customary for people to not reveal, lo magli, they don't reveal their real claims other than in the presence of the court. So that it's, we'll call it within the realm of acceptable behavior. People don't, as they don't reveal all their cards. They play it close to the chest, as they say, until it comes to their court appearance. Omar Amemar. Ano Nahardo Ano. I am a rabbi that comes from Nahardo, and I actually disagree with what was said before in the name of the Nahardoin rabbinate. The Usvirali, I have the opinion, I'm of the opinion, Detoyin, V'chose V'toyin, that one, as we saw before, can make a second claim that follows on the heels of the first claim, where there's partial contradiction, but it's not a total uprooting. That's okay, that's legitimate. V'hilchasa, and the Gemara itself rules Tayin V'chayzer V'tayin, and here the Rashbam repeats the characteristic of this ruling. Notice the Rashbam toward the lower part of the page. V'ilchasa chayzer v'tayin tikun loshon harishon, an improvement of the initial claim. Afopisha makishon ktsas, even though there's a partial contradiction of the initial words. Hayol v'enoy oikron legamri kinleil, since he's not uprooting his initial claim entirely, as we described earlier. We continue with new examples. Ze omer shel avosai, v'chalti shnei chazaka, v'ze omer shel avosai. One claims it was his father's, and he's been there for the necessary years of chazaka, and the other one says it was my father's. Hai aisi sadi, davosai, v'ochlo shnei chazaka. One brings witnesses for both points in his claim, that it was his father's and that he has been there for the years of Chazoka. V'hai aisisadi docho shnei Chazoka. And the other party brings witnesses that he was there only for the years of Chazoka. Omar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman makes, we'll say, a simple type of calculation, and he says, Uki achilu lebadi achila, stand the Achila is a reference to the Shnei Chazaka. For Achila literally is consumption, it's use of the land, harvesting of crops and eating them. Stand the two, pit the two up against each other. So that would, they would cancel each other out, but you're left with testimony concerning the land being his father's. V'uki ara b'cheskas avosa, and allow the and place the ownership of the land in the domain of the one who had proof that it was his father's. Omar le Rava. Rava disagrees with Rav Nachman. He says, you have a case of contradicting testimony. For edus mucheshes he. It's contradicting testimony. You've got one pair of witnesses saying that it was this guy's father's and he has been there for years of chazaka. The other guy has witnesses saying it was he's been there for years of chazaka. So you've got witnesses that are contradicting each other. And one of them is definitely lying, so we don't know which one. So we don't accept the testimony whatsoever. The testimony is completely obliterated as far as Rava is concerned, and therefore we're not going to opt to give the land to the one who had testimony that it was his father's. Those witnesses are part of a court appearance where there is some underhandedness. There's someone lying here. So we don't know who it is. We throw them all out. Omar Le, Rav Nachman responds, Nihi diskachish bachilosa. Rav Nachman emphasizes once again the content. He says, granted that there's contradiction as far as that information is concerned, we continue at the top of Amud Beis. Bavosa mi iskachish, regarding fathers, is that information contradicted? So on a superficial or general level, Rava would seem to emphasize the behavior of the people, and Rav Nachman seems to emphasize the content of the testimony. And the Gemara now continues with a question. Notice it's a long question. Lema Rava Rav Nachman. Here the Gemara tries to parallel the machlokis Rava and Rav Nachman with a machlokis of earlier Amoraim between Rav Huna and Rav Chista. So shall we say that Rava and Rav Nachman are the plukta de Rav Huna of Rav Chista komifliki, are parallel to their disagreement? What case did they address? Ditmar shnei kitei edim amakishois zuazu, two pairs of witnesses that in a particular case, in one testimony, contradict each other. Omar Rav Huna zu ba b'fnei atzma u'me'ida v'zu ba b'fnei atzma u'me'ida. Rav Huna says that each pair are still qualified and acceptable to testify in other cases. Each pair can come by themselves. Rav Huna won't accept a case where those same two pairs of witnesses come and testify regarding some other particular case, but they can come, each set of witnesses can testify independently in other cases. Very simply, Rav Huna does not throw them out in the colloquial sense. For Rav Chisda Omar, what's his attitude toward witnesses that on one occasion appeared to contradict one another, pairs of witnesses that contradicted one another? Rav Chisda Omar, Bahadi Sadi Shakri Lomali, what do I have to deal with lying witnesses at all? And as far as Rav Chisda is concerned, they are disqualified from testifying even independently in any further case, in any other case. The Rashbam, a few lines down from here, says, Bahadi Sadi Shakri Lomali, Veloyo Yidu Od Bishum Edus Boilam. And they are not to testify in any other cases. De uki momono achazke velototziena misofek shema ha'edim psulim. And the Rashbam adds the result of this is that the money that we had doubt who is the owner of it, we leave it where it is because we can't rely on the testimony. Maybe they are liars. Maybe they're unfit as a result of their being liars. So we just presented Rav Huna and Rav Chisda. Now the Gemara parallels these two with the earlier names mentioned, the chronologically later individuals, Rav and Rav Nachman. Lema Rav Nachman Yoma Rav Huna v'Rava k'Rav Chisda. Shall we say that Rav Nachman, he was the one that accepted the point of information that had not been contradicted, namely that it was his father's, he would appear to parallel Rav Huna, who says that these guys, right, who are contradicting here, are acceptable in other cases, in Eidus Acheres. And Rava, who threw the two contradicting groups out and didn't accept even the information that was not contradicted, he would seem to parallel Rav Chisda, that just that rejects witnesses that contradict each other, even in other cases. Lo, Moore says, then we're not going to parallel them like that. But before we go further, just for a point of clarification, in the Rashbam, we have a little star in the Rashbam, our marked Gemaras, about halfway down the narrow lines of the Rashbam. Leimo Rav Nachmon, Shemachshir Edus Davosa, Sheidu Edim Mukhoshim, Dahainu Edus Acheres, Shalohu Cheshibo, Kid Rav Huna. Shall we say that Rav Nachman, who accepted the information that had not been contradicted, namely that it was his father's, that would seem to be like Rav Huna, Shechshir Be'edus Acheres, Shalohu Cheshibo. Notice the term Edus Acheres, the called other testimony. So just like the issue of fatherhood, as far as Rav Nachman is concerned, was uncontradicted testimony, was other information, other than the Shnei Chazaka, that would seem to be like Rav Huna, who spoke in terms of accepting these witnesses in other cases. The Gemara, though, says no. We continue in the Gemara text. Aliba de Rav Chisda kuli amalo pligi. And in order to appreciate that observation of the Gemara, once again we look at the Rashbam. Aliba de Rav Chisda kuli amalo pligi lomar kol echad anos vira ke Rav Chisda. With regard to Rav and Rav Nachman, they're not going to argue each and each one claiming that they could be like Rav Chisda. Devadai Rav Nachman lo svira le k'Rav Chisda. It's clear that Rav Nachman would not hold by Rav Chisda. Deha Rav Chisda afilu edus acheres ba'alma poisel. Rav Chisda says these contradictory witnesses, they cannot appear even in an outside case that has nothing to do with the case in which they were found to be contradictory. Kol shekein beedus davosa shehuchishu ha'edim me'achila ba'oisa edus shel oisa karka. All the more so, the witnesses that had been found contradictory regarding this particular land. Who is the owner of the land, of this particular land? They were found to be contradictory regarding the chazaka issue, so that the father ownership issue of this particular land, certainly as far as Rav Chisda is concerned, could not be acceptable. In other words, all the more so that would be rejected. So Rav Nachman, who accepted the information of Avosa, can certainly not fit into the scheme of things as far as Rav Chisda is concerned. That's what the Gemara means over here when it says Aliba de Rav Chisda kule amalo pligi, that with regard to Rav Chisda, there is no attempt on the part of Rav Nachman to say that he can agree with Rav Chisda. Ki pligi, we continue in the Gemara, under what framework does Rava and Rav Nachman find themselves arguing? Aliba de Rav Huna, within Rav Huna's frame of reference. Rav Nachman ke Rav Huna. Rav Nachman says that Rav Huna would agree with him, just like Rav Huna wasn't in total rejection of these witnesses. He allowed them to testify in other cases. That Rav Huna would agree with Rav Nachman, and Rav Huna would accept the information regarding fatherhood, father, whose the point of information that had not been contradicted before. So Rava says that Rava, who rejected opting to give the land to the one who had witnesses concerning his lamping his father's, says Ad Kan, Lokum Rav Huna, Rav Huna and his leniency was stated, but it doesn't go as far as the case in, that I addressed. Rav Huna was willing to be machshir, was willing to accept these witnesses, El Eidus Acheres, regarding other unrelated testimonies, Avol La'isa Eidus Lo. But regarding this very same land that has already been seen, these witnesses have been seen to be contradictory with regard to one aspect of their testimony. Even Rav Huna will agree with me that we are not going to give the land to the one who had the uncontradicted testimony regarding fatherhood. Hodar Aisi Sadi Davosehi. And now the story goes on. The one that we saw as far as Rav Nachman was concerned, Rav Nachman benefited one of the litigants over the other. So the one that had lost as far as Rav Nachman was concerned, in other words, the one that did not have any testimony regarding the land being his father's, now brings witnesses that it was his father's. Does this new information change the ruling of Beis Din? Once again, initially, as far as Rav Nachman was concerned, Beis Din granted the land to the one that had the uncontested issue of it being his father's. Now the other litigant brings witnesses that it was his father's. If we say that this will change the court ruling, then that would indicate, and this leads us into the new topic, this would indicate that we are not concerned with what might appear to be Zilzul Beis Din, or the cheapening of the court's authority in the eyes of the public. If the court appears as a yo-yo, one time they rule it's his, the other time they rule it's not his, that would appear possibly as Zilzul Beis Din, as a cheapening of the court's rulings. If, as we just said, the new information will change the court's rulings, that would indicate to us that we're not choshish for Zilzul Beis Din. So now let's continue in the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman, Anan Achtine. We had removed him. In other words, the fellow who initially had testimony benefiting of indicating his chazokah, but not father testimony, we had removed him. Literally, we had lowered him. Anan maskinole, we raise him. That, by the way, doesn't mean that we're going to give the land to him. But what it means is that the land is going to be taken away from the one who initially won the case and placed in a situation of neither one being granted ownership of the land. How would matters proceed beyond this point in time? That's already another issue. Do we say, for example, Kol Olim Gvar, the stronger one will, whoever physically is stronger will win out, so be it. But the main point, as far as we are concerned, as far as Rav Nachman is concerned, even though initially we granted ownership to one party, the new information enables us to remove it from his ownership and leave it, we'll say, unowned. Anan maskinole, Rashi, the Rashbam says, as we indicated on the last narrow line, Klomar, lo nachsik eze yoyser mizeh, hayol v'eidu shneim shoveh, we're not going to entitle one to have more ownership over it than the other, since at this point, their source of, or their respective testimonial background is the same. And Lizilusa de Beidino, lo chayshinon, as we continue in the Gemara, as far as the court appearing as lacking importance because of their because of the testimony that can be reversed, that is not of concern to us. Mosiv Rava Vitema Rebbe Zira. Notice we have a long question, and we're going to now bring a source. Either it's Rava raising the question, or Rebbe Zira. We're going to bring a source that tells us, that seems to indicate that we should be choshish for Zilzal Beis Din. The source deals with a totally different topic. Deals with the topic we call, in rabbinic jargon, Eidus Isha. Eidus Isha is a topic dealing with a woman who we knew was married, and witnesses come and indicate that she is no longer of married status. Why is that? Either the witnesses testify that her husband died, or they testify that she was divorced. Shnayim omrim meis, shnayim omrim lo meis. Shnayim omrim nizgarsho, shnayim omrim lo nizgarsho. You can see you've got two sets of witnesses contradicting each other regarding this woman's marital status. Haresu lo tinase. Well, a woman in that situation shall not remarry. V'niseis lo teitse. If she does happen to remarry, thinking that, well, she has witnesses saying that she's no longer married, lo teitse, she doesn't leave her second husband. Rav Nachman Rav Yossi omer teitse. In a case like that, she must leave her second husband. Omer Rav Nachman Rav Yossi emos ani omer teitse. When do I say that she must leave the second husband? It's man shebo eid v'achach niseis. That's in a case where the negative witnesses, meaning those witnesses that stated testimony that she's still married, had come, and only afterwards she remarried. In other words, that's what we saw in the Reisha, where the Tanakama was lenient in the sense that he said, even if after both sets of witnesses appeared, and we're in a very doubtful situation, if she remarries, the Tanakama says she doesn't have to leave the second husband. Rav Nachman Rav Yossi says she, in that case, she does. Avol Niseis, if her marriage was on the word of the, or no, sorry, if her marriage took place after the initial testimony that she's no longer married, and only afterwards, v'achar kach bo edim, and only after she remarried a second husband, the negative witnesses then appeared, harezu lo teitze, she does not have to leave. She doesn't have to leave the second husband. Now, why does she not have to leave the second husband? Because we're choshesh for Zilzal Beis Din. The Tanakama Bichlal, you saw that im niseis lo teitze. Even Rav Nachman Rav Yossi, if she married after the initial appearance of the allowing witnesses, the witnesses claiming she's no longer married, at that point there was a seemingly clear-cut case in which the court can grant her license to remarry. There was no doubt at that point in time. So it was a court ruling indicating she's allowed to remarry. Now, if later witnesses come that create a cloud over the matter, that, as far as Rav Nachman Rav Yossi is concerned, is not reason to remove her from the second husband. And why not? Because if we were to remove her from the second husband, how would the court appear in the eyes of the public? If initially they ruled she's allowed to be with him, and now they're ruling she can't be with him. So because of the chashash for Zilzal Beis Din, Rav Nachman Rav Yossi says, lo teitze. So what do we see from here? We see from this Tanaic source that one has to consider Zilzal Beis Din. How can Rav Nachman then rule contrary to this source, saying in the case of the land ownership issue, well, initially we gave it to the guy with the father testimony, and later on when the other guy brings father testimony, well, we'll take it away from the guy we initially gave it to. And I don't care about Zilzal Beis Din, but here you see a Tanaic source says that you do have to care about that. Omar Lei, Rav Nachman says, he now responds, Ano savri lemevar uvda. I thought to actually rule and not be choshish for Zilzal Beis Din. Hashto, however, but now, the osiv oson at now that you are raising a question on that, in other words, you're presenting this source saying that one must consider Zilzul Be'ezin V'Oisvan, Rav Hamnuna B'Surya, and Rav Hamnuna in Surya also raised a question on my approach. Lo Avdinon Ba'uvdab. I'm not going to act on that. And if the initial ruling of Basin granted ownership of land to a particular party, even though there's new information that comes in later, we're not going to change the initial ruling. Nofak of Ovad Uvda. Rav Nachman then walked out, and lo and behold, he ruled like he originally held, and not Choshish V'Zilzul Basin. Man dechazav sovar ta'usahu biyadei. One who saw this behavior on the part of Rav Nachman thought maybe he made a mistake here. He after seeing how many attacked his ruling with sources, how can he then go back to his original thinking? And yet he did. It must have been a mistake here. Velohi, no mistake. Elo mishum detalya ba'ashli ravavi. Rav Nachman had ashli ravavi. These are great ropes to suspend himself from, meaning he had upon whom to rely. He had great rabbis, great tenuyim upon whom to rely. The Rashbam in the lower part of the page says, the Talibashi Ravavi, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shum Gamliel, we have three tenuyim, Kulu, Savri, Lehuda, Lochashinu, Lezilzul, Lezilusa, the Beidino, Kedem, Meforesh, Ravashi, Bemaskona. We'll see. Ravashi explains. He presents these opinions, all holding that we're nachashish v'zilzul basin. Notice, by way of our markings, we have a long point, and even though the shiurim are generally speaking within the context of a daf yomi style, here we're going to be spilling over quite a ways, simply because of this, of the fact that we have one long point that will take us down a good ways down. Lamed Beis Omed Aleph. The Tanaic source that we're going to encounter now deals with classifying someone as a Kohen. We have a subtopic heading on the side, and it is Lahasbir Machlokes Tanoim Binyan Haloas Kohen Acharei Shepikpaku B'Kashruso. Should we restore a Kohen to Kohen status after some doubts arose concerning his acceptability as a Kohen? Al pi eid echad, on the words of a singular witness, what appears initially to be a singular witness. A double underline marking will appear, and that is used as shlavim behesber machlokes atanoim. We'll see stages in explaining this machlokes atanoim. So, as we always advise in our shiurim, which use the shas ozer, the marked gemaras, to practice the bird's eye view approach to gemara structures. And notice you have stage one that will appear second line from the bottom after seeing the Tanaic source. And stage two will appear on the second line from the top of Lamed Beis Omed Aleph. And stage three, which is of importance right now to Rav Nachman, that appears only at the lower half of Lamed Beis Omed Aleph. So we're aiming to get to that point, to stage three of this analysis, to see where you have great tanoim that are not choshish v'zilzul based in. So once now that the game plan, the structure has been laid out, we can focus on the topic at hand, and that's the issue of kashrus of a kohen. Disnan, Rebuta Omer, Ein Malin Lekuna Piedechot. We don't enable someone to ascend to the kuna by virtue of the testimony of a singular witness. And by the way, when we speak about the kahuna, the Rashbam has a particular approach, and a different approach appears in the Rabbeinu Gershom. I should say a more restricted approach appears in the Rabbeinu Gershom. I'm mentioning that simply in anticipation of the Tosfos as well, where he seems to go like the Rabbeinu Gershom. So what is the issue of the Kuna? Well, in the eyes of the Rashbam, you can see in the lower part of the page, Ein Malin Lekuna Lahachsik Odin B'Koyein, to consider someone as a Koyein, number one, Lechol B'Truma, number two, V'Lavod Avoida, and number three, V'Liso Es Kapov Al Pi Enechon Hamamido Shu Koyein. Now, if you glance down at the bottom of the page to the Rabbeinu Gershom, the second to last wide line there in the Rabbeinu Gershom, Ein Malin Lekuna Pi Erechad Lachlok Lo Truma. The Rabbeinu Gershom simply cites the Truma example. There is significance in the difference between these two opinions. The issue of the Kuna, is it just a matter of giving him Truma, which we'll see later on that Truma Bizman Azeh would be rabbinic, midrabbanan, or does this issue concern even matters like working in the Beis HaMikdash and doing Avodah? And the fact that the Rashbam mentions all three examples, his idea of Lechol B'Truma might also be Truma Doraisa, Truma that was tithed in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Now we go back to the Gemara text. So we saw Rav Yehuda said that we're not Ma'ala Lekuna with the testimony of one witness. Omar Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar is coming to explain Rav Yehuda. He's not coming to argue. Amosai, when is this the case that we're not Ma'ala Lekuna Pi Erechad? Bizman Shiesh Olav Urin. That's when there were Urin. Urin are challengers. Sometimes you might use the word in terms of complainers, people that are challenging his kashrus. Avol ein olav orin, but in a case where there are no orin, malin lekuna al pi erechad, then we allow someone to be, we'll say, reinstated to kahuna status with the testimony of one witness. Rav Shimon Amliel Omer, Mishum Rav Shimon Askan, Malin Lekuna Al Pi Eid Echad. Now, you notice with our markings, we've dashed underline Malin Lekuna Pi Eid Echad here, and two lines above, under Rebbe Lozer's name, you saw also Malin Lekuna Pi Eid Echad, Rav Shimon Lahainu Rebbe Lozer. Should we say that they're saying one and the same thing? No, that can't be. You wouldn't have two Tanoim appearing in the same source saying the same thing. So what's the difference? What's the case? What's the point of difference between the two? V'chitema. Now v'chitema inevitably is a point that will be rejected. So let's continue with that in mind. If you'll say Aror Chad Ika Binayu, when we speak about Urin in this Tanaic source, challengers, the point of difference, could it be how we would relate to a singular challenger? Where Rebbe Elazar Sova Arochad, Rebbe Elazar says even the challenge of a singular individual is a serious matter, and that one witness could not doesn't have the strength to reinstate someone to Kuna on the heels of a singular challenger. And we continue at the top of the Aflamet base, Omer Aleph, Rav Shimon Gamliel Sovar Aror Treg. And Rav Shimon Gamliel, he would hold that only if the challenge is coming from two people, relate to the singular witness that's reinstating the Kayin. But if it were a singular challenger, the testimony of one witness that reinstates him to Kashrus would be accepted. So, is that the point of difference between our Tanoim? Not so. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Divrei HaKol, Ein Aror Bochus Mishnayim. Rabbi Yochanan tells us that everyone holds that in order to challenge someone's Kashrus, You can't challenge someone's kashrus of tikkunah unless there are two. In other words, one challenger would not be respected. We wouldn't relegate significance to a singular challenger at the outset. So that's not the point of difference, the numbers. Elo Arotre. The Iror in this Tanaic source, the ones that were challenging the Kohen's kashrus would have to have come from two. The Hocha B'mayaskinenu. Now, what are the circumstances in this Tanaic source? What are they arguing about? Kagon the Machzikinu Le'Bavua Dahai the Kohen Hu. We go right to the beginning now. At the very beginning, we have a person in front of us concerning whom we knew that his father was a Kohen. His father was, there was no doubt that his father was a Kohen. The Nofak Ole Kola de Ben Grusha Uben Chalutzahu Vechtine. And then word went out, murmurings, public rumblings went out that the father here, who was a Kohen, he married either a divorcee or a chalutza, and the child that results is a cholol, is no longer would be no longer kosher as a Kohen. Now let us emphasize in halachic terms, using the Rashbam, third line from the top, kol ba'alma velo edus, mere rumblings, not formal testimony. So we start off with an individual who we have no reason to question as being a kosher Kohen, simply because we knew his father was a kosher Kohen. Then a word went out, rumors, that he is not a kosher Kohen. Vachtine means, and we lowered him from Kohen status, from what we had assumed earlier. V'yosa eid echod v'yomar de Kohen gomor hu v'askine. And a singular Kohen, a singular aid, witness, came testifying that this guy is a totally kosher Kohen. In other words, his father didn't marry a divorcee. You know, he was not mothered by a divorcee that married a Kohen. He's a Kohen Gomor. So then what happened? Askini, we raised him. And the testimony of the singular Kohen was able to, we'll say, dissolve the rumors. The Osu Beitre, the Amri. Then two witnesses came and said, "The Ben Grusha Chalutzu, he's not kosher." Ve'achtine, and we lowered him. We have two witnesses saying he's not kosher. V'yosa eidecho v'yomar dekoinhu, and another single witness came saying that he is kosher. So you have a sandwich situation. One saying kosher, two saying not kosher, and then a subsequent one witness saying he is kosher. So the two witnesses were found here between the testimonies of the two singular witnesses. Before we come to any conclusions, we have to lay down another premise. Udekule alma, and everyone agrees, all the Tanoim agree, mitstarfun edus, we join up single testimonies. We take a look at the Rashbam that we'll see across from here with the Kuli Amo, Bein Rabbi Lozer, Bein Rabbi Shimon Leo, Mitzarfin Edim Hameidim Ze Shelo Bifnei Ze Bishar Edias, V'Hochinami Yeshlon Ulitzaref Min Hadin Eid Rishon V'Eid Achron Hamachshirin. Likewise over here, we allow the single testimonies to join up, the single testimonies of those individuals that were saying he's kosher. And if you didn't have an issue of zilusa beidina, certainly we would enable this fellow to be considered kosher. Now, in the source as things stand, though, there is a machlokas between Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Shimon Leo. And the machlokes would appear to be, and I just want to remind everyone that we're at the second stage of an analysis that's going to be followed by a third stage. So don't take this as a maskona yet. What would they be arguing about if in theory everyone agrees you can join the witnesses that said he's kosher, the issue at hand, according to our second stage of analysis, should we consider the problematic result of a based in switching its rulings? That Rebbe Lozer Sovar, Kevon de Achtine, since we removed him through the testimony of the two witnesses from Kohen status, that was, we'll call, the first serious act. I know that there was a removal before when the rumors came out, but that's not of halachic significance. But the act of based in ruling upon the testimony of two witnesses, that's an act that's, we call, from Iker Hadin. And the Rashbam elaborates on this topic. At that point, that the two witnesses that testified together that he was not kosher, we dismissed this fellow from kahuna status, lo maskinon lei, upon the appearance in court of the second kashering witness, we're not going to reinstate him to kohen status. Why not? Well, once we removed him, it would cheapen court rulings in the eyes of the public if we were to reinstate him. Chayshinon lezilusa de beidina. Rav Shimon Gamliel Sovar, anan achtine, we removed him. Vanan maskinale, when the second kashering witness comes in, we enable that testimony to join up with the first witness, as we said before, mitzarf theatis. We reinstate him. Lezilusa de beidina, lo chayshinon. And we're not concerning ourselves, we're not going to restrict ourselves from changing the psak din because of that concern. Maskif law Ravashi. Ravashi challenges this analysis. Ihochi, if it's so that their machlokes is regarding chashash lezilusa de beidina, my irya chad. Why speak about a singular witness coming at the end? Afilu betray nami. Even if two kashering witnesses would come at the end, they're two. Machlokes tanoim should exist. But yet, the Tanaic source presented the machlokes tanoim in a very specific, very unique situation, where it was the sandwich model, where the kashering witness at the end came as a singular witness. Just to repeat this point, if the issue was zilzul based in, so even if two koshering witnesses would come at the end, you would still have this machlokas tanoim if that was the issue. But yet it seems that the machlokas tanoim appears only in the case where a singular koshering witness came at the end. Elom Ravashi de Kule Almo Lo Chayshina Lezilusa de Beidina. And this is the main point for our sukya. This is stage three, as we said before. Everyone would agree with Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman's final ruling that we saw in Omid Aleph, that we're not Chayshish Rebezdin, the Zilzul Bezdin. And if two witnesses that apostled him caused the court to dismiss the fellow from Kuna, if they would be followed by two koshering witnesses, we would reinstate him to the Kuna status, even though the court appears to be like a yo-yo. We're not Chayshish Rezilzul based in. So then what's the issue at hand here between Relozer and Rav Shimon Gamliel? V'hacha b'litzaref edus ha miflegi. What we thought before was, but we try to lay down as a premise, is actually the point of controversy. And that is, do we, in fact, allow single testimonies to join up to form the minimum required two witnesses to offer testimony? Ube plukto dahani tanoi. And that issue is parallel to a machlokas tanoim that will appear in the following Tanaic source. Notice between the lines we've written in the names Rav Nosson and the Rabbonan. They're found in the Seifa of this Tanaic source. And the reason for this emphasis is that the Reisha, you'll notice we have brackets in our marked Gemaras. The brackets are designed to show that the first part of the source is not relevant to our sugya. The Machlokas Rav Elozer and Rav Shulam Leo is parallel to the Machlokas Tanaim and the Seifa, which deals with a different topic, and that's the Machlokas between Tanakam and Rav Nosson regarding the issue of Tziruf. Tziruf is the joining up of testimony or acceptance of testimony in the court. The section of the source that you see in brackets deals with another topic. That deals with how initial testimony takes place. The event concerning which the testimony is stated, how did they see the testimony? This marking scheme, by the way, you can see is alluded to in the Rashbam, Divar Masel Desanya. Now that we've said that, we can learn the source straight through and not be worried about confusion. So our machlokes between Reb Elozer and Shulam Leal is not a machlokes concerning Zilzal Basin, but a machlokes concerning the issue of tziruf, joining up of singular witnesses to form a kat, to form a pair of witnesses. Desanya, ad shiru shneim ke'echad. The initial sighting, the initial viewing of the event has to have taken place with the two witnesses seeing it together. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korchomer afilu bozeh achar zeh. Even if they saw the event one after the other, that's okay, as long as they testify together in Beis Din. We continue. Ein eduson miskayemes beBeis Din ad shiidu shneihem keechad. Testimony is not acceptable unless the two witnesses come and testify together in court. Rav Nosson Omer, shomen dvarav shozeh hayom, ulchshavu chaveru lemocher shomen dvarav. As far as Rav Nosson is concerned, one of the two witnesses can state his testimony today, and the second witness can come in tomorrow and state his testimony, and we'll view them as two witnesses. In other words, we referred to before as tziruf. They join together. At this point, we turn to the Tosfos on Daf Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph. Dibur Hamaschil Omar. It's the second Tosfos on Daf Lamed Aleph Omed Aleph. This relates to the Gemara four lines from the top. We saw in the Gemara two people arguing over ownership of land. Claiming that it was his father's and he had years of chazokah, and the other one saying it was his father's. Each one brought witnesses in. One brought in witnesses that it was his father's, and the other one brought witnesses that he was there for years of chazokah. Regarding that case, Rabba, and here we have to emphasize the name and the spelling. Rabba is an Amora with a hey at the end of his name. There's another Amora that sounds very similar, but it's with an aleph, and we refer to him as Rava. Rabba, with the hey at the end, he said that will benefit the one who had witnesses concerning years of chazakah, because that which he claimed that it was his father's, even though the other guy has witnesses that it was his father's, we believe the fellow with the chazakah because he had a migu. Ma lo l'shaker was what we saw in the Gemara. And we focused on the, within that Gemara, our Gemara at the top of Lamed Aleph Amad Aleph, Abaye's challenge to Rabba was, how can you accept him the one that had witnesses that he was there for years of Chazakah, when his initial claim, namely that it was my father's, and I've been here for years of Chazakah, that my father comment was contradicted by witnesses. Then we call that Mali L'Shakir B'Mokom Eidim, or Migu B'Mokom Eidim. It seems that Rabbah is not so concerned about that. So Tosfos says, Omar Rabbah Malo L'Shakir, even though his initial claim is running up against the testimony brought in by the other guy, Rabbah Garsinon, you have to maintain the Girsa with a hay at the end. And not, don't have Rava here, because if you were to have Rava saying this, then that would contradict Rava elsewhere. The Abaye of a Rava, Amri Lekamon, they say later on Daf, Lamed Gimel Omed Beis, five lines from the top of the Gemara over there, regarding Abaye and Rava, Delo Svira Lehu Ha Derav Chista. They don't hold from a comment made by Rav Chista. Rav Chista there was soimech on a taina. He was soimech on a claim based on Malo L'Shaker, even though it was against witnesses. What does the Gemara there say on Lamed Gimel Beis? That Rava doesn't hold from that. Why does Rava not, along with Abaye, not hold by Rav Chista? Demali l'shaker b'mokam edim lo amrinon. See, we don't accept migu type claims when the initial claim is running up against the other, with a testimony brought in by the other guy. So, in order for things to be smooth, we've got to maintain the girsa of Rabbah is the one speaking over here who does seem to accept that kind of testimony. We continue with the next Tosfos. I should say that, let me just correct myself. Rabbah accepts that type of claim that's running up against the testimony that counters words of his initial claim. The next Tosfos, Ma'li L'Shaker, six lines from the top, Mali L'Shaker B'Mokam Eidim Lo Amrinon, the point we just discussed. We have a little condensed version of what Tosfos will deal with on the side, under our Taktzir heading. We will see here in this Tosfos, Horashba, but Tosfos, Makshe, Loma Nechshav Baal HaChazaka B'Tanosu D'Shel Avosav Hoya. Why do we consider the one who has witnesses that he was there for Chazaka years, regarding his claim that it was his father's, Migu B'Mokoyim Edim? Why do you say that that claim is up against testimony of the other party? Another topic that we'll see in this Tosfos is a topic called To'anin L'Yoresh. Someone that is on land by virtue of inheritance, the court will enter arguments or enter pleas or claims, suggest claims on his behalf. Yoresh, someone who inherited land, isn't expected to know all of the land history. So we know there's a concept in halacha called Toyanin L'Yoresh. As we turn to the Tosfos, notice a long question marking that appears. Mali l'shaker b'mokam edim lo amrinon. Teima l'Rashba. The Rashba questions the Gemara's conclusion that this man's claim is considered b'mokam edim. Amai have b'mokam edim. Why do we view, we'll call him the Baal HaChazaka, when he made the claim that it was his father's, why is that considered contradicted by the other guy's witnesses claiming that it was the other guy's father's? Neymar, why can't we resolve all of the information, the claim with the testimony, and discover that there's no contradiction. Why not say, Shel avoisav hoisa yoim echad, v'nomar shalokcha me'avosav, that it belonged to one party's fathers for one day, and the other party's fathers bought the land from that person's father. And being that we're talking about a person claiming that he inherited it, it's inherited land, we have that concept that we mentioned in our introductory remarks, that we advance claims for the benefit of the heir. And we will believe him that his fathers were there for one day. Bemigu, because he could have made another claim that we certainly would have accepted, the E boy Omar, the Machzik could have said, Minoch Zavinte, I bought the land from you. And let us add to that point that claim would have been accepted. After all, he has a chazoka, he has been there for 3 years. And a claim like that, I bought it from you and I've been here for three years, is a winning claim. So this fellow who claims that it was his father's, that should be viewed as I'll say, acceptable testimony. And that when he mentioned that it was his father's, yeah, it was his father's that happened to have been there for one day. They bought the land from the other guy's father. And there's no, you don't have then any claims made by the Bala Chazoka that contradict the testimony brought in by the other fellow. Ulekamo nami, and the same spirit of things, later, 13 lines from the bottom, in the Gemara, de ka'omar de modu nahardoi, the Gemara, of course, that we learned, that nahardoi, who was initially restrictive regarding the issue of tayin v'chazir v'tayin, nahardoi concedes, regarding someone that initially said that it was his father's, the hecha di omar shel avoisai shelokhua me'avosecha de chazir v'tayin, if he upgrades his testimony by saying that, in other words, he maintains what he initially said, that it was his father's, but he adds that it was his father's that bought it from your father's. Nardoi concedes that in that case, the Choyzer V'tayin, Toysu says that in light of the concept of Tainin L'Yoresh, ha'afilu lo yit'on shelok hu'ha, even if that litigant wouldn't have said, my fathers who bought it from your fathers, El Omar, Shedoru Bo Yom Echad, this land was my father's that happened to have lived there one day. Anan Tanino Le, we would have made the claim on his behalf that it was land that his fathers bought from the other guy's fathers. So, after all is said and done, the Rashba's question is, why are we viewing the fellow making the claim that it was his father's as migu b'mokamedim? Once again, that the Baal HaChazoka, according to Rava, wouldn't win because his initial claim of his father's is up against the testimony brought in by the opposing litigant. Couldn't we have couldn't we have explained the whole story as, yes, it was the Baal HaChozoka's fathers who happened to have been there, who bought it and were there for one day after having bought it from the other guy's fathers. And with that, there's no contradiction to the testimony that the other fellow is bringing in. V'yomer Rabbeinu Yitzchok. The Shela Vosai, when the Baal HaChozoka made the claim it was my father's, and I've been here for Chazok years, then he brought testimony that he was there for Chazok years. Those words, Shela Vosai Mashma, it implies Shehoisa Me'olam Shela Vosai V'lo Shelo Kua Achi Yoforish B'dvorov. Those words aren't subject to interpretation. If we're going to understand that it was his fathers who happened to have bought it from the other guy's fathers, then he would have had to spell it out. If not, the expression Shel Avosai indicates it was always my father's. And that information is up against the testimony brought in by the opposing litigant saying that it was his father's. Ulekamen denokat shelokhua. We mentioned regarding the situation of Moldu Nahardoi, that where the litigant who had said it was his father's would then come back and say, yes, it was my father's, but they bought it from your father's. The Gemara says, as it's in the description of the case, shelokua, that my father's bought it from your father's. Lo shitzor shiyiton sheyoda shelokua. It's not as if this heir has to make his claim with definitive knowledge that he claims, I know that my father's bought it from your father's. That's not necessary. Elo shelavosai. This land was my father's. Shiroisi Shidoru Bo Yoim Echad. And I know that they were living there one day. Al Kain Ani Roitze Liskois. And therefore I want to win ownership of the land. Deshemo Lokhua Meavosecha Bemishpot. Because maybe they bought it from your father's. Of course, the other party has witnesses to that effect, but my father's might have bought it from your father's. The Toanin liyoresh, we taina on behalf of the yoresh, as we explained earlier. So that that Gemara where Modi Nardoi doesn't necessitate definitive knowledge of his father's having bought it, but the possibility that his father's bought it. We continue with the Tosfos U-Modu. This, of course, is relating to the topic we just saw in the previous Tosfos, referring to the Gemara 13 lines from the bottom, U-Modu Nahardoi. Nardoi concedes regarding someone who initially claimed in court, it's my father's. Hey Chodomar Shelokhua, where he says, Shelavosai, it was my father's, but they bought it from your father's. Misafko Lari, the Ri has a point of doubt in his mind. Hecha denofik livroi v'chozar v'osa lebezdin I motzi lemeimar hochi. If someone initially claimed it was my father's, and then the upgraded testimony, or the upgraded claim that it was my father's who bought it from your father, that upgrading took place after this litigant went outside and then came back. We had seen in the Gemara that changed claims after having been outside are problematic because maybe he was trained to say that. In this case, since it's not a totally new, partially contradictory type testimony, but simply adding information, does the problem of having gone outside before adding this information, does that constitute a problem of chayzer v'tayin after having been outside? So that remains a point of doubt as far as the re is concerned. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Omar, and if you're viewing this on the computer, you might have to scroll to the next Mark Tosfos page. This Dibur HaMaschil refers to the Gemara two lines from the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph. Omar Lei Rava Vaha Elus Mucheshesi. This is coming on the heels of a case that we saw in the Gemara. One brought witnesses that it was his father's and that he had been there for years of Chazaka, and the other, the opposing litigant, brought witnesses that he was there for years of Chazaka, but didn't bring any testimony regarding father information. Rava was not willing to go along with Rav Nachman and grant the ownership or possession of the land to the one that had father information testimony. On the side, we have a topic heading with a structural note. A trapezoid shape appears. This shape is not going to appear until you get to the last part of the Tosfos, the last third, the bottom third of the Tosfos. But we note already at this point, these are hesberim, these are explanations. Loma kan rova magdir hamikre ke'edus mucheshes. Why does Rava view this case as, say, contradictory testimony? Bizman shebedin edim zoymimin Rava sever mikan ulabo nifsal. Rava, in a different topic, but a topic that also concerns testimony, the case of Edim Zoymimim, that's the, let's just assume that everyone knows what Edim Zoymimim is, Imono Ayusim B'mokom Ploni, and the people who are found to be, we'll say, lying in the case of Edim Zoymimim, Rava holds that they are considered posel only Mikan Ulhaba, from the point that they were shown to be liars, but retroactive to the time that they offered their initial testimony, Rava says we don't passel them retroactively. So in our case, you have one party saying it was my father's and I've been here for years of Chazaka, and then that testimony was contradicted by the other fellow bringing in testimony that he was there for years of Chazaka. So there's contradiction regarding years of Chazaka, but the initial point of it was my father's, that wasn't contradicted. So why not apply Rava's analysis of Edim Zomim over here and say, all right, from the point of testimony concerning Chazaka, you disqualify the testimony, but the initial information that will stay intact because Mikan Ulahaba, from the point of problem, the point of lying, the point of the revealed lying, that point onwards we render unfit or pasul, rejected. But the initial information, Shalavosai, that wasn't that should remain intact based on, once again, the concept of Mikan Ulahaba who nifsal. Omar, let's turn to the Tosfos. Omar le Rava v'ha'edus mucheshes hi tema, and we also have a very long question marking. I would point out ahead of time that we're going to be using for a significant amount of this section brackets, so that the initial question doesn't really take up too much of the Tosfos. Tema, amai havoi edus mucheshes. Why does Rava simply toss out all of the testimony over here? V'horovo islei b'merubo in the seventh parak of Bava Kamo, parak Zebur in the third parak of Sanhedrin, the aid zomeim mikanu labohu nifsal v'lo mifsal elo mishah de iskachush. Because of Rava's principle of mikanu labohu nifsal, in our case, let us say that they're not, the testimony is not considered rendered unfit other than from the time of contradiction. And as a result, there's room for us to say, achilasa, regarding the years of chazakah, the iskachosh. So we saw contradictory testimony. Who had the years of chazakah? However, the initial claim, avasa, regarding father, the lo iskachosh, there wasn't contradictory testimony to the claim made by that litigant that it was my father's and I had years of chazaka, that the initial words it was my father's, that wasn't contradicted. So lo iskachosh, that hadn't been contradicted. If it wasn't actually contradicted, why should we view it as contradicted? Why should Rava view it as contradicted when Rava himself holds by Adam Zomim mikan ulhabo nifsal, only from the point of, say, revealed lying do we render them, consider them unfit. Now, as far as markings are concerned, after all, this is called Tosfos markings, you'll notice that we have a very long, I call them angular brackets. I mentioned angular brackets, and later on, we're going to make use of our standard circular, curlicue-type brackets for another purpose. Why, then, do we have these long angular brackets? So our note indicates that they are here to show us the sograyim marim de'ad kan ikur hakushya. This is, up till this point, is the main question. The heart of the question has just been presented. Achreim mofia tshuvas ateisus. Afterwards, you notice we have the lower third of the last third of the Tosis, the end of the line, v'nireh, and there the Tosis responds to why Rava is, in our sugya, not saying simply mikan ulahaba nifsal. Now, that having been said, let's go through the Tosis. At the first of the wide lines, where the brackets begin, this point regarding testimony that had two points of information, and there was hazoma concerning the second point of information, we throw out, according to Rava, the second point of information, but the initial point of information that had not been the subject of the Hazama, we maintain that. Tahachi Omar b'meruba, we thusly say in the seventh parak of Bava Kamma, in the case, let me just give you by way of background, the case involves witnesses that testified regarding someone having stolen and slaughtered an animal. And the result of stealing in a stealthful fashion and subsequent slaughtering of an animal results in a multiple payment. We call it four times or five times the value of the animal, depending on whether the animal stolen was a sheep or an ox. And in that story, where there was testimony offered by initial witnesses concerning someone having committed theft and subsequent slaughtering, the Tosfos goes on, Dehuzmu al hatvicha, v'al hagneva lo huzmu, afagav detoch kedei dibur heidu al hagneva v'al hatvicha. A second set of witnesses came in and said, how can you testify about the defendants having slaughtered on a particular day in a particular place when you were with us on that day in a different location? That standard case of Hazoma. The Hazoma then was focused on the initial testimony concerning the slaughtering. And Tosis also points out that the initial testimony of theft, that this guy stole, and within an instant, they also went on to say he also slaughtered. He stole and slaughtered. That's called edus. That's toch kedei dibor. And generally speaking, when two points are stated so close to one another, in this case, the information of slaughtering was within a second or two of the information concerning the geneva. Nevertheless, we're able to split, even though in general toch kedei dibor is considered attached, we're able to split. That's what Rava says in Perek Merubah. Let's go over those the last phrase again. Afagav the toch kedei dibor he'idu al hageneva ve'al hatmicha. LeRava, according to Rava, who holds eid zomei mikanu labon nifsal, kevon demahi shaita the komitzvi who the komitzli, since from that point they were found to be zomim, from the point of time that the second witnesses testified of regarding the slaughtering, atvicha the itzumitzum, regarding the slaughtering that was testified by the first set of witnesses, so that first set of witnesses were found to be zaymimim, liars. Ala gneva the lo itzum, but regarding the testimony of the initial theft, they're not found to be liars regarding that. And the result would be that the defendant would have to pay for the geneva, then that means he'll have to pay kefel, twice the value of the animal. Multiple payments, the twice an additional, it gets you up to 4 or 5, that he, the initial defendant, would not have to pay, that the zoymim will have to cover, based on kasher zomim. So you can see that Rava is very, very committed to this idea of mikan ulahaba. And if that be the case, why then in our discussion concerning claim, it was my father's and I've been here for years of Chazaka, and then there was contradiction regarding the years of Chazaka, why can't Rava maintain the testimony, or I should say the claim that it was his father's? And now as Tosis goes on, he gives us a little bit of background as far as Rava's opinion regarding Mikan Labo. There are two ways of analyzing, or two ways of explaining Rava's shita. Why does he disqualify the Edim Zomim only Mikan Ulaba, only from the point in time that they're exposed to be liars, or I should say only from the point in time that they as they say, were exposed to be liars, and not retroactive. When I say not retroactive, I mean not retroactive from their initial appearance as witnesses. There are two explanations why Rava takes that approach. That we've marked, you can see we have diamonds highlighting the word lelishna. Ulelishna davitaima de Rava hasam. The explanation for Rava over there, mishum de eid zoimem chidush hu. That whole topic of eid zoimem has an element of novelty, uniqueness to it. And what is that? The fact is that we believe the second set of witnesses over the first set of witnesses. That idea is unique because in general, if you have two against two, we would say they cancel each other out and throw them out. But in the case where the second set of witnesses are, they're not questioning the initial act. They're simply questioning the ability of the first set of witnesses to testify because of their being in a different time, a different location at that very time. We believe the second set of witnesses over the first set of witnesses. That's considered a chiddush. And v'ein l'cha boy elo mish'as chidusho. Nicha. And as a result of the topic of Edim Zomimim being unique, as we attempted to explain, we don't disqualify the first set of witnesses in a retroactive fashion, but rather from the point in time that they're exposed to be liars onwards, but not retroactively. So Nicha means there is no question regarding Rava's psak over here. So what are we trying to say? In the case of Edim Zomimim, which is a very specific type of disqualification, it's a time place oriented, as we explained. There Rava says Mikan Ulahabon Nifsal. We can't extend that approach to all cases of testimony. Our Gemara doesn't involve Zmomos, Edim Zomimim. Our Gemara involves contradicting witnesses. Simple, straightforward contradiction of information. In a case where there's, we'll say, a straightforward contradiction of information, so there we expose these witnesses, the two sets of witnesses, to be liars, so we throw out all of their testimony. In other words, even though the contradiction was regarding the issue of Chazoka and the initial, the first part of the claim that it was my father's wasn't part of the actual contradiction, but we know that we're dealing with someone here is lying, and as a result, we have no problem in just rejecting all of the information or all of the claim made by. All of the testimony that was supposed to back up the claim of one of the parties. That's if you explain Rava in the case of Edim Zomimim, why he says Mikan Ulabo Nifsal as a Chiddush. Ela, in other words, Rava who views the topic of Edim Zomimim as a Chiddush, we can't apply Rava's approach to other situations of testimony. Hello, Lishna de Meforish time of the Rava, Mishum Pseida de Lukuchos. According to the other approach in explaining Rava's position, Rava's position of Mikarba, Nifsal, is a result of his interest in not upsetting commercial history, if you will. You have witnesses that were shown to be Edim Zomim, shown to be liars. Now these people in the meantime, or since their initial testimony, they happen to sign as witnesses on subsequent contracts and deals and what have you. All kinds of commercial activity they had participated in as witnesses. Can you imagine what the result would be if you say that Edim Zomimim are rendered unfit retroactively back to the time of their initial testimony? What about all the contracts that they signed between their initial testimony and the point in time that they were exposed as liars? Well, if you say Lemafreya hu nifsa, which happens to be the approach taken by Abaye, if you were to say that, that means these guys are phonies retroactively from their initial point of view. All the contracts that they signed between then and now being the time that they're exposed as phonies, are all canceled. That results in a lot of people losing their money. Pseido de Lukuchos. So that the explanation of Mikan Ulabo Nifsal is not an explanation that classifies Edim Zomimim as something unique and novel, but rather it comes, the Mikan Ulabo position comes as a result of our concern for commercial activity. Hachinami. So too over here. In our case of contradicting witnesses, Nehim Ninhu, let us believe those witnesses that said that it was the litigant's fathers, in addition to what they had said, that he had a chazaka, that the litigant had a chazaka. Let us believe them regarding the initial testimony that wasn't contradicted, based on the idea of mikan ulahabo nifsal, and you're not dealing with you're not dealing with some type of analysis that's relevant to some to a chiddush, because that's not the analysis according to the second lashon. V'afilu hecha deleka pseida delekuchos lo mifsal lemafreya afilu lahilishna. And even in cases where there is no, we're not going to be subjecting anyone to a loss. And, well, that makes you think that, well, if you have a situation where we're not subjecting anyone to a loss, and let us render them unfit retroactively. Not so. And how do I know that? Midaboy hosam. From the fact that the Gemara over there in Bava Kamma raises the following question: My ika bain hai lishna lahai lishna. What's the difference between saying that Rava holds mikalala based on chiddush or based on pseudo lekuchos? So there's an attempt to seek a difference between the two lishonos. For lo komar, the Gemara there doesn't suggest, well, ika beinayu lehecho deleko pseudo lekuchos. The point of difference between them would be a case where there is no loss to commercial transactions. Well, since that's not offered as a point of difference, it's mashma that according to both lashonos, even where there's no pseudo de lekuchos, according to Rava, we're not going to pasul amafreya. We're not going to rule retroactive disqualification. So according to this lashon that analyzes Rava mikala ba based on the pseudo lekuchos, once again, why does Rava here throw out the testimony of the witnesses regarding it being the litigant's fathers? Now we have I call this an internal brackets. It's a small section that's in these circular type of curlicue brackets. We have a note indicating that within these brackets, another question is raised, but it also happens to be answered. So we can isolate this section as being separate from the big question. So the old kasha. Well, you can notice we're reading straight through the Tosfos now. The old Kashya, the Kamar v'Samuch on the Amud Beis, Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, seven lines from the top, the Gemara that we already learned. The Gemara there said, Aliba de Rav Chista. Rav Chista rendered unfit witnesses to testify in all other cases after they had been participants in contradictory testimony. The Gemara said, according to Rav Chisda, kule alma lo pligi, everyone agrees, and there we said specifically, Rav Nachman could not possibly fit into Rav Chisda, or Rav Chisda could not possibly be in agreement with Rav Nachman. There, the Gemara said, kule alma lo pligi, mashma, that implies, the Rav Nachman lo motzi sovar b'shum inyan k'Rav Chisda, that Rav Nachman could not possibly fit in together with Rav Chisda, de choshev lehu sa'adi shakri. Rav Chisda, who viewed contradictory witnesses as being liars. Umino lei. How does the Gemara know that? Dilma Savar Rav Nachman, the Mikan Ulahabo Hu Nifsal. Maybe Rav Nachman holds from this concept of Mikan Ulahabo. Now, according to the the Sefer Tosus Hamavuar, that means that from the point of time that they testified regarding the Chazaka, they would be considered liars. But from the point of time, from the point in time that they testified about the fathers, they were still not contradicted. There was no contradiction regarding that. And in that spirit, in light of that, maybe Rav Chisda also would say that that testimony is acceptable. So why does the Gemara feel that that Rav Nachman could not possibly fit in together with Rav Chisda? Umiyu, however, regarding this point, ha ika lemeimar mishum delo kaimolon kerova baha, to suggest that Rav Nachman adopts the position of mikan lo nifsal, namely we associate that with Rova's point. We know that that is a position that is rejected. Lahaloch, it's one of the six cases that we happen to paskin like Abaye over Rova. The six cases are known by the abbreviation Ya'ol Kigam, Yud Ayin Lamed, and the Ayin in that acronym is a reference to Eidim Zoymimim. So since the position of Mikanu Labal is not a, we'll say, not an accepted position, it wouldn't be comfortable for us to set up Rav Nachman as holding that way and thusly have Rav Nachman and fitting into Rav Chisda. So take note, as we mentioned earlier, we have the trapezoid shapes appear. We have to answer, why is it that Rava is here quick to dismiss the testimony concerning father because it's part of a testimony that was found to be Eidus Bahakosha, when Rava holds that Eidim Zonimim Mikan Ulhabo Ho Nifsal? So Tosfos answers, Venira the Sugya Dehocha, our Gemara here, where Rava passels Lemafreya, Kiahi Lishna Dechidish, it's in accordance with the approach to Rava's din of Mikan Laba that that's a result of Eidim Zomimim being a Chidish. Since here we're not dealing with Hazoma, we're dealing simply with Eidus Bahakosha, contradictory testimony. Therefore, we can rule Limafreya. We passel them retroactively from the point that they began testifying, and hence Rava's approach here of rejecting Eidus Davosa. Avol, Lelishna de Pseido de Lekuchos. However, according to the approach to Rava that Eidim Zomimim is Mikalabo because of Pseido de Lekuchos, and Tosfos pointed out earlier that even if there's no Pseida de Lekuchos, we passel only Mikan Laba, so there's room for suggesting that in our Sugya, then Rava should not have passeled Eidus Davose. So that Lashon Sovar will be of the following opinion. De lo omar le Rava le Rav Nachman me oilum hochi. That Rava never said to Rav Nachman, this is Eidus Mukheshes, and hence rejecting Eidus Davosa. In other words, that never happened according to this Lashon of Pseida de Lekuchos. Ula Riva Nireh. The Riva resolves that to raise a question on Rava's ruling here of Eidus Mukheshes, where we throw out Eidus Davosa from Rava's stance, Mikan Labo by Eidim Zomimim, is, we'll say, it's unjustified. Why? Delo domi hach dehocha, our case here of avose and shnei chazoka, lahi de meruba, it's not similar to the case of the edus of geneva and subsequent tvicha, where there was hazoma on the tvicha, and yet we preserve the edus on the geneva. We're going to see very shortly that look, let's go read on in the Tosfos. We're highlighting with a triangle marking the word the Hosam and later Hocha, the two contrasting cases. The Hosam, Gneva Tvicha, Tre Mili Ninhu. The act of theft, that results in the thief paying twice, Kefel. If he happens to do an additional act, namely slaughtering the animal, so that generates another additional payment of another two or three times. They are Tre Mili Ninhu. They're two separate acts, separate points of testimony. Ulahachi, Ageneva Dolo Itzum Lo Itzum, and therefore we can say that after the first set of witnesses were found to be Zimimim regarding the slaughtering, the Tvicha, the Geneva, a separate point of information, remains intact. And therefore, their testimony indicting, condemning the defendant to pay double as a thief remains. Kevon de la Habohu Nifsal, because of Rava's ruling that Adim Zomim only from the point of, we'll say the point of lying onwards, are they rendered unfit. And that concerns the Tvicha. Elohocha. However, here, in our sugya of Edus Chazoka and Avos, Ki is Kachush Achila, when he is shown to be unjustified regarding the Shnei Chazoka, in other words, the testimony was found to be contradictory regarding the Chazoka, the information concerning the land being his father's is also rendered unfit and unjustified and unacceptable. Why? The testimony regarding the land having been his father's without chazaka, in other words, it was my father's and that's it, without his having a chazaka, doesn't help. Tahavi mukminon biyode disle sade dochlo shnei chazoka. If he had a testimony only regarding his father, and the other guy had testimony regarding his being there for years of chazoka, we would have given it to the one that had the testimony regarding years of chazoka. De nemon lomar. When he said, the one with the years of Chazoka happened to say, it was my father's and I've been here for years of Chazoka, he is believed to say, Hoiso Shalavosa Yom Echad. It was my father's one day. Bemigu di Iboy Omar Minoch Zavinta. Because he could have said, being that he has testimony that he has a chazoka, he has testimony regarding chazoka, he would have been believed to say that when I said it was my father's one day. And I would imagine that that would mean after they bought it from your father's. Umihu, akati de choshev lo gemora keilus acheres. However, as the Gemara goes on, it's noted that the Edus of Avose is really, in fact, a separate entity. On Omid Beis, there was an attempt. There's an attempt on the part of the Gemara to associate the Machlokis Rava and Rav Nachman with the Machlokis Rav Huna and Rav Chista, and in that attempt, the Gemara was clearly viewing Edus Avose as Edus Nefredis, at the point that the Gemara wanted to say that Rav Nachman would go like Rav Huna, just like Rav Huna says the contradictory witnesses are acceptable in other testimonies, so too Rav Nachman is saying that the testimony of the father being the father's is a separate kind of testimony. So from the Gemara's standpoint, the Edus Davose is not integrally related with Edus of Chazoka. So, Lo Osi Shapir, the Chiluk that the Riva just made, namely that Geneva and Tvicha are two separate points of testimony as opposed to testimony of Avose and Chazoka, it doesn't appear that that chiluk really can be, we'll say, can be relied upon. We continue now with the Tosfos on Omid Beis, Dibur HaMaschil V'Rav Nachmon. Correction there. Dibur HaMaschil, the first Tosfos, Vezu. This Tosfos relates to the Gemara four lines from the top, the sugya that we've been discussing already at, to a great extent, the two kite edim, two pairs of witnesses that are contradicting one another. So we saw a machlokis, Rav Huna and Rav Chista, where Rav Huna said, true, over here they're contradicting each other, but they can separately testify in different cases as a pair of witnesses. The fact that they're contradicting each other here doesn't render them unfit in general. Rav Chista said, if they're found to be contradicting, so we know that someone's lying over here, they're not good for any other testimony. Either way, Tosfos raises a question: why do we say that? Even at the, we'll say, the best case scenario is that they're fit to testify somewhere else, but in this case, they're both their both of their testimonies are thrown out. Tema bein l'Rav Huna bein l'Rav Chista nehemninu l'basroi. We have two pairs of witnesses. Pair number one testified first, and then pair number two testifies second. Let us believe the second pair of witnesses, Bemigu the Iboy Paslinu Likamoi Begazlanusa, on the grounds that the second pair could have come into court and said that the first two are thieves. In other words, the second two witnesses had another way of rendering unfit the first pair of witnesses. So they should be able to come into court and say, listen, this guy has got the chazaka, the one we're testifying about, and you ought to believe us, because if we wanted to discredit the first pair of witnesses, we could have done so simply by testifying that they're thieves. Up till this point, we have the Iker question, the main question. That's why you see the brackets. After the brackets, then we get into the answer. So, but within the brackets, umihu bemigu deiboy havi mizami lehu, another kind of migu, though Tosis here rejects, to suggest that we should believe the second witnesses because they had the power to render the first ones edim zemimim, leko lehamninu, that is not enough. We can't believe them in their current taina because they could have rendered the other ones zaymimim, the yireim lahazimon pen yuzmu gamhem. They would be afraid to declare the first pair of witnesses zaymimim on the grounds that they would be afraid themselves to be declared as zomim. Other witnesses would come and say regarding them, how can you guys testify about them when you were with us in another place at that time? So the introducing the potential for being mazim is something that is unrealistic. They wouldn't do that. Venir Ali. So now, question is, why is it that we reject the second pair of witnesses and not believe them because they had the migu that they could have disqualified the first pair on the grounds of being thieves? So Tosha says, nearly the migu b'mokim edim lo amrinon. A migu in the, now literally means in the face of countering witnesses that we do not say. Now, how are we going to apply that over here, this concept of migu b'mokim edim? So Tosha goes on to elaborate. The migu, a claim that you're making, and you want to strengthen it based on a potential alternative claim, lo yuchal l'sayom Yoiser Mishnei Edim, cannot help them, cannot benefit them, strengthen them more than, let us say, the power vested in two witnesses. Right now, their testimony, their initial testimony, is contradicted. They're trying to testify that their man has got the chazoka, but the other fellows, the other witnesses, testified that their man's got the chazoka. And if their witness, if their testimony isn't going to help them, the strength of a migu claim isn't going to be better. So that this too is classified as a case of migu b'mokom edim, trying to strengthen their claim in a situation that their edus was not accepted. So we cannot accept their migu. V'afilu hoyu imoyim meyo edim ein emonim. The trei kameya, even if this second pair of witnesses happen to have 100 witnesses testifying along, that wouldn't have helped because we hold 2 is like 100. And now another reason why the suggestion at the beginning of the Tosfos is not accepted. The Oidomiri, the Lo Shayich Migu, Ela Ba'odim Echad. The whole idea of believe me with what I'm saying because I could have said something else is applicable to claims made by an individual. El avo b'shnayim lo shayich migu. But to suggest the migu concept in the case of two, as we're trying to do over here, the two witnesses should say, or should be able to say, believe us with what we're saying regarding the chazoka because we could have testified regarding the first pair as being thieves, that's not shaykh. The ein das shneim shove, to suggest that two people think alike, in other words, that each one of the two witnesses has that same thought pattern, that's unreasonable. What one plans to say in his claim isn't the same as what the other would be planning to say in his claim. So the suggestion of believe the second witness is because of the migu, you can see, is rejected, either because it's a form of migu b'mokom edim, or because migu applies only to the claim made by an individual, not by claims made by two people. We continue now with the next thesis, Dibur Hamaskil v'Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman kirav Huna, based on the Gemara 6 lines from the top. Rav Nachman, who wanted to accept the testimony concerning father, is like Rav Huna, who says that the contradictory witnesses are acceptable in outside testimony. Tosfos opens with a long question. You can see we have a long question marking to the side of the Tosfos text, and you can see most of the text is used to form the question. We have a topic heading to introduce the Tosfos. Let's read together what we have on the side under the Nosei. Diyun, an analysis, b'shitas Rav Nachman, or I should say a discussion within shitas Rav Nachman, shesover k'Rav Huna di'egus ha'mulcheshes koshel edus acheres, where Rav Nachman is paralleled to Rav Huna, that says that though there is a current contradiction, they are kosher for other testimonies. Loma, why is it then b'maseches k'subis? And what Tosfos does here is what's characteristic of many Tosfosim. He deals primarily with another Gemara. In other words, using our Gemara as a jump-off point, let us then analyze an outside sugya. And it's a Gemara in Ksubis. Why there, Eino Ma'afsher, why is it then that Rav Nachman himself does not enable Gevias Hachov, a collection of a debt bishtar through a bill of collection, through a document, sheheidu alav, concerning which that document has witnesses that signed therein. And the document itself is testifying, so to speak, to a debt that exists. And the holder of the document would anticipates being able to collect money owed to him, as the document describes. And there are witnesses that signed on it. But those signatories happen to have been, we'll say, challenged. Shahachoismen hayupsulim. They were the subject of someone else's testimony, of two other witnesses saying, yeah, the signatures that are in this shtar are in fact of these people, these two witnesses. However, when they signed, they were unfit to sign. Either they were minors or they were relatives of the creditor. Or they were forced to sign at the expense of their lives being threatened. Three different ways that will be featured here as to why the second set of witnesses are disqualifying the signatories. We are taught in Maseches Ksubis, in Ksav Yodom Yoitze Mimokom Acher, if the signatures that are found in this particular bill of collection exist in another document. In other words, we can verify the signatures in the document as being authentic signatures even without these challengers, by virtue of the fact that these signatures appear in another document. There is now room to suggest, Hare nitan lahachshiv edusim shel haposlim, could we not view the information by the second set of witnesses that comes to, we'll say, discredit the signatories on the grounds of their having been unqualified to sign, ke'edus acheres, like outside testimony, like a different case kind of thing, me'edus shel kiyum hachov, outside testimony, different from the testimony as far as signature verification. Now, if we would say that, then the disqualifying witnesses would be considered an outside matter, and the signatures within the document are verified by the presence of an outside shtar, and we should be able to collect the debt thereby. And yet, Rav Nachman in Ksubis, Maseches Ksubis, says the debt is not to be collected. And that essentially is what Tosfos is asking. So now, let's go to the text. We noted already that there's a long question ahead of us. Part of this long question will also be several lines of text quote from Maseches Ksubis. We have a second long marking indicating that. Now the Tosfos Tema. The Beperek Sheni de Ksubis. Tanya. In the second parak of Subas, you find the following brisa. Shnayim shohayu chasumin al hashtar. There were two signatures on a document, umesu, and they died. Ubo shnayim v'yomru, and two other witnesses came and said, yodanu shiksav yodom huzeh. We recognize these to be their signatures. Avol. Kitanim hoyu. They, however, were minors, and they weren't fit to testify, to sign a document. Or they were disqualified witnesses on the grounds of being relatives. Oy anusim hoyu, or they signed under duress. In ksav yodom yotzim imokam acher ein nemonim. If the signatures found in the document exist in another document, that's Mokamachir, some other place, then these disqualifying witnesses are not believed. Uporech, and it's asked there in the Gemara, when you say that the disqualifying witnesses are not believed, are you saying umagvinon bei b'shtora that this bill of collection now can be used to collect money? Treinu, you have essentially two against two. You've got the disqualifying witnesses saying that they weren't fit to sign, and you have the ksav yodam yotzim mimokam acher, which will say verifies the signatures. So is it not a case of two against two? And if that's the case, we're basically in a state of doubt. How can you say that the debt can be collected? Umasik hasam Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman himself, he concludes, he rules regarding that, delo magvinon bishtora. In fact, we do not collect the debt with that bill of collection. Vukitre lahaditre, we pit the two against the two. We have the two disqualifying witnesses against the verified signatures that saying the debt still exists. So we pit the two against two. Vuki mamona b'cheskas marei, and we leave the money in its current status, namely, we leave the money in the possession of the debtor. And we do not enable the creditor to collect the debt. Ve'amai lo magvinon bay. Well, why not? Why not collect with that shtar? Vosvira le hocho kiravuna. We see in our Gemara that Rav Nachman holds like Rav Huna, the ksherim heim li'edus acheres. That when you have a contradictory testimony, they are nevertheless kosher for outside testimony. Do mukminon lehu as cheskas kashrus. When you view each set of witnesses on their own, they had enjoyed a status of being acceptable. It's only here in the situation of contradictory testimony, so we can't conclude anything based on their respective testimonies as they're contradictory. But regarding outside cases, we allow them to enjoy their status of kashrus. After all, even when you have contradictory testimony, you don't know which set are lying. So you have a situation of doubt, and when in doubt, we fall back on a previous known status. So they have a status of kashrus. Vahasam nami, and there too, with regard to the shtar in Maseches Ksubas, ke'edus acheres domi, the testimony that the ones who signed were unfit to sign, that is essentially like outside information. Daha ein makfishim elu es hachasumen bezos hamilve. The disqualifiers themselves, they're not denying that the ones who signed on the loan in the document that the loan ever took place. Let me read that again. Da'ein makfishim elu es hachasumen bezos hamilve shoyu oimim ein chayav lo klum. The disqualifiers here are not saying that there's no debt. Elo she'amru, all that they're saying is einchem nemonim bedovar zeh depsulim hoyisem. You are not believed. It's more of a disqualification of the individuals, but not of the event. They're focusing on the individuals, saying that you are not qualified to sign. But as far as the debt, it's quite possible that there is a debt. V'havalon lemeimar, and we should have therefore concluded, specifically Rav Nachman should have said, de ne'emonim kemohocha de ksherim af algav the elu makfishin oisan upoislim, that regarding the debt, they should be believed just like over here, that we say that they're, that the contradicted the witnesses are believed for another, for outside testimony, even though right now afalgav the elu makfishin oisan upoislim. Even though right now, in our case of the witnesses contradicting each other regarding the chazaka, they, through their contradiction, it appears as if there's a declaration that they're unfit, and yet we are willing to accept them with regard to Eidus Acheres. So too, just to repeat, so too in the case of the debt collection, let us view the issue of the disqualification as separate from the existence of the actual debt. And if we can do that, if we can separate the two ideas from one another, so as far as disqualification is concerned, that's one matter. As far as the existence of the debt, well, that's another matter. And you, and with that in mind, let the debt be collected. V'omeri. And now we finally arrive at the answer stage of Tosfos. The Chi Omru, when the disqualifier said, Ketanim Hoyu, Leko Le'ukminu Achazkayu. If you recall before, and we should have noted that we have a diamond above, and then we're going to use it now in light of the diamond marking that just appeared. Before, in developing the question, we said that the contradictory witnesses are kosher for Eidus Acheres, based on the chazaka of kashrus that they are entitled to enjoy. When you have contradictory testimony, granted, here we don't know who's telling the truth and who's not, but each set of witnesses in isolation, though there's doubt, they also have a chazaka, that had a previously known status of being acceptable. In this case, to speak of the signatories on the shtar as being able to benefit from a previous cheskes kashrus, that and thereby being considered, we'll say, legitimate signatories to a loan, that we cannot say over here. Why? Because when testimony came in that the signatories were minors, that basically is saying that they were born and grew till age 13. At no point in time did they have a cheskas kashrus. They didn't have a previous status of being eligible and qualified to testify. So that we don't have a chazaka to fall back on in this case of the shtar with the debt. V'chein anusim, and likewise with regard to the testimony that they signed under duress, nami lo mafki lehu mecheskes kashrus. The disqualifiers are not attempting to remove them from a cheskes kashrus. D'amrinon, they are saying anusim hoyu machmas nefoshes. They had to sign because of threat to their lives. And under those circumstances, the disqualifiers are basically saying that no debt had ever come to be. So that as far as the basic debt is concerned, there's contradictory testimony on those grounds. And that's a response to what was suggested in the formation of the question, where we wanted to say that the existence of debt was considered a separate matter from the disqualification of the witnesses. Not so. If you say that the signing of the document was because their lives were threatened, that's basically saying that no debt never existed, and they had to sign in order to save their lives, which was okay. That's okay to do, but there's no debt. And the third disqualification, upsuli edus hayu, they were unqualified witnesses. Ika lememar kigon shepoislim oison mi shenoldu. The disqualifiers were testifying that they were posel from the time they were born. Shoymin krovim hayu v'achshav nisrachaku, that they were relatives. From the time that they were born, just you can imagine that the one who had loaned the money was an older relative of these witnesses, and that they were born as unfit, as unqualified on the grounds of kurva, of relation, of being relatives, one of the forms of witness disqualification, and only now they have become distanced, meaning, but at the time that they signed, they did not have a previous cheskes kashrus to fall back on. And therefore, we understand, once again, how Rav Nachman over here can say that when you have contradictory testimony in our sugya, the edus of Chazok was contradictory, but the edus considered, the testimony considering father is a separate matter, and therefore Rav Nachman was willing to accept that testimony, and as opposed to the shtar featured in Maseches Ksubis, Rav Nachman himself said that debt could not be collected. We continue now with the next Tosfos, Dibur Hamaskil V'Rava. This refers to the Gemara, seven lines from the top. Rava was of the opinion that when you have the contradictory testimony concerning the Chazoka, the fact that one of them had also testimony regarding the land being his father's, everything is rejected, is thrown out. And we wanted to parallel Rava to Rav Chista, who passeled Eidim Hamukhoshin for other cases of other testimonies as well. The Im Tomar, if you try to say Im Kain Amai Choshiv Rava B'Meruba V'Perikze Borer, why does Rava in Maseches Bava Kama, in the seventh parak and in the third parak of Sanhedrin, why does he consider Eid Zomim Chidishu? The Eid Zomim is a novel point of law. This, of course, is something we discussed at great length in one of our previous Tesisim. And V'ein L'chobo Elo Mishas Chidusho, and as a result of Eid Zomim being a Chidish, and we explained the fact that we believe the second witnesses over the first witnesses is a novel point. Generally speaking, two against two, both are rejected, and yet in Adam's Omen we don't say that. And as a result, we disqualify the first set of witnesses only from the point in time that they are revealed as being liars. And that's the concept, by the way, of their posel mikanu l'haba. However, v'halo ma shehu nifsal eino chiddush, that which we say that the edim zaymimim are rendered unfit, that's not a chiddush. That's not something novel. Daha min hadin haya lios l'shnem sulim. By letter of the law, both pairs should have been considered unfit. The original pair that are called the Zaymimim and the second pair that try to disqualify them, they're called the Mazimim. Kamo b'shnei kitei edim amachisho zo ezo. Just like in the case of two contradictory witnesses, we say they're both rendered unfit. In Cain, if that be the case, namely the disqualification aspect of Adam Zomimim is not itself a point of novelty, just like we just that finished saying that in the case of Adam Zomimim, both sets of witnesses should have been disqualified. In Cain, lo have chidush elo mashe hamazim in cherim. The novel point in Adam Zomimim is that we believe the second set of witnesses. So that if that be the case, so then in Adam Zomimim that we when we declare the first set to be unfit, that's not something novel. And if that's not something novel, then we should be able to say that they're when we define them to be unfit, they're unfit retroactively from the very beginning when they said their initial testimony. And yet Rava doesn't say that. Rava says that they're disqualified only from the point of revelation, where they're revealed to be liars. But all the testimony in between their original testimony and the revelation of their being liars, all the testimony they said in an intervening time and the documents they signed, that would be okay according to Rava. V'omerik, the Rava, the Omar Chidushu, Rava, when he said that Adam Zomimim are Chidush, lo have elo lefi hamaskona de osi shapir kirav huna. That was said in accordance with the conclusion of our Gemara, where Rava's teaching of disqualifying both sets of witnesses, including the testimony regarding father, is in line with Rav Huna. Oh, so now that we say that, what was Rav Huna's attitude towards witnesses that contradict one another? Rav Huna did not disqualify them for Eidus Acheres. Only in the case of Adam Zomimim do we say that the first set are puzzle. Oh, if that's the case, then the psul of Adam Zomimim, in fact, is a chiddush. Let me go over that last point. Once you say that Rava falls under the umbrella of Rav Huna, then we have to look at the issue of contradictory testimony through the eyes of Rav Huna. And he does not disqualify, he doesn't passel contradictory testimony with regard to outside testimony, with regard to other cases. So that, so too in the case of the two sets of witnesses in the Adam Zomimim situation, there too, the idea of passeling both is not part of our thinking. So then, in the case of Amzom, what is the chiddush? The fact that, not the fact that we believe the second witnesses, but rather the fact that we do passel the first witnesses. And that being the case, we can understand that Rava passels the Adam Zomim Mikan Laba, because we say Ein Lo Elo Mishas Chidusho, as we explained earlier. We continue now with the next Tosfos. Divur HaMaschil Anan This refers to the Gemara 12 lines from the top in the Sugya of Zilusa de Bedina. Anan Achtinon Le Anan Maskinon Le. We have the right to, even though I should say, we removed the Kohen from Kohen status when the two witnesses testified as his being unqualified came in. And then when the testimony later on declaring him to be kosher comes in, we say that witness joins up with the original witness that said he's kosher. Now I have two witnesses saying kosher, we reinstate him. V'im hoya oisoi the less lay cheskas avosa muhsok tchila with regard to the anan achtino le vanan maskino le, that has to be connected to the case of the two people arguing over land, where one had witnesses concerning chazaka plus father, and the other had chazaka concerning just the chazaka alone. The Gemara then continued that scenario where the one that had, well, I should say initially, where the one that had Rav Nachman's ruling was the one that had testimony concerning father in addition to chazaka was granted the ownership, because the issue of the chazaka was canceled out. Later on, the one who had lost the case brought witnesses that the land was his father's. That enables the court, according to Rav Nachman, to change its ruling and take it away from the one they originally had granted ownership to. And that was included in this phrase of anan achtinole, anan maskinole. Now, if the one, the imhoya oise de les lei cheskas avosa, musik pchila, osi shapir, achtinon maskinon. If it had been that the individual that did not have initially cheskas avosei, he didn't have evidence that the land had been his father's, but that individual had originally been in possession of the land, then this phrase of achtinon maskinon works out very well. Because how would events have unfolded? You have a person that was in possession of land, then the challenge came up because someone came in with witnesses concerning his having chazaka plus it being his father's, and the one that was in possession of land had only witnesses concerning the chazaka. So at that point he was removed. That's achtinon. We lower him, we remove him. Then later, when he brought witnesses to support his claim that it had been his father's, we say, oh, we can now bring him back onto the land, place him back onto land in conformity to his original chazaka. He was originally in possession of it. So the phrase, we remove him and we put him back, would work out very well if that had been the background, if that had been the case, namely that originally, before the litigation set in, that particular individual had been in actual possession of the land. And even in the alternative scenario where there was land that was subject to their controversy, but neither party had been in actual possession of the land, Motzi Lefaresh, we can explain the phrase Achtinon Maskinon as follows. Achtino le lesito loze. We had two parties arguing over, we'll say, possessed land, when one party had more evidence. He had, in addition to chazok evidence, he had testimony concerning father. So what does achtino mean in that case? We will say remove it from the both of them and give it to one. Umaskinole, and then the next stage of what we reinstate. What does that mean? We reinstate. What do we reinstate? When the second party brings witnesses that it was his father's, what are we reinstating? Umaskinole shenotzieno miyado. We then take it away, the land, from the one that had been granted ownership of the land. We take it away from him, and it remains like it originally was unpossessed. V'yehi din kol dolim kvar. And now we will impose the concept of the ruling that let the whoever stronger take over, in light of the fact that we have nothing, we have no legal evidence, we have no chazaka to fall back on. So we say it's now up for grabs. That's the idea of kol da'olam. Olam means whoever is stronger, gavar, he'll win. So that what we have, what Tosfos has done is explain the application of anan achtinu leiv, anan maskinu leiv, that we saw in the case of the kohen issue, and we apply it to the case of the land. Just technically speaking, it was really in the case of the land that we had first encountered it, and in the case of the Kehanim was an additional illustration of that. We continue with Tosfos Dibur Masel V'im. It relates to the Gemara 17 lines from the bottom. This was information found in the source dealing with contradictory testimony concerning a woman's marital status, where two said her husband died and two said he's still alive. And the Tanakama ruled that if after the two sets of witnesses appeared with their testimony, she nevertheless went ahead and got married, v'niseis lo teitzei. B'perek sheni d'ksubis muki, in the second perek subis, the Gemara sets up this case of her marrying her second husband. After all, it's a case of a woman shrouded in doubt, you would say. Two witnesses saying she's free to marry, but two others saying she's still married to the first husband. So the Gemara there says that her marriage to the second husband is kishenises le'echod me'edel. She is marrying one of the two witnesses that said that the husband was dead. And in addition, v'yomer is bori li. And she, too, is saying that I have no doubt that my husband is dead. So there's no issue, as far as this couple is concerned, of any doubt. So that there isn't going to be, as the Gemara discusses, any korban being brought either. Even an osham toli will not be brought. And another point that Tosfos mentions very briefly, v'chashodo leka kidepirish hosam, that one might suspect that the witness said that the husband is dead because he had his eyes on that woman. We don't say that in this case. His testimony, his word by himself would have not had any value anyway. His word is only accepted because he's partnering with someone else. So in situations like that, we don't say that there is an element of chashad. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur Maschil Avol. This relates to the Gemara, 14 lines from the bottom. This was in the same context. This was Rav Nachum Reb Yossi's opinion. Avol niseis v'achachach bo'edim hare zu lo teitzei. Rav Menachem Reb Yossi was more machmir on the woman than the Tanakama. However, even he has a scenario where if she got married, she doesn't have to leave the second husband. That's if she first remarried and then restrictive witnesses appeared. At the point that she got married, though, she was getting married on the word of the two witnesses that her husband died. Not knowing anything else, she then got married to a second husband. Only later, witnesses saying that he's not dead appear. So Rav Nachum Reb Yossi says she doesn't have to leave her second husband. And Tosfos points out, v'taimo mishum zilusa debeidina, the reason for her not having to leave the second husband, even though right now we are in a state of doubt concerning her marital status. If we were to separate her from the second husband, that would be Zilzel Beis Din, Zilusa the Beis Din, a cheapening of Beis Din. In what sense? She was able to remarry. Beis Din gave her permission to remarry after the appearance of the first two witnesses saying that the husband is dead. And now, after remarrying, if we were to separate her, that would be a reversal of the court's initial ruling, and that falls under the category of Zilusa de Medina. Fekoshe l'Rashba. Notice we have a long question marking. The Rashba takes issue with this analysis. Essentially, this was the Gemara's explanation of Rav Menachem Reb Yosi. After all, it was brought in as a kasha on Rav Nachman by Rava to show that we're choshish for Zilzel Beis Din by the fact that the Brisa rules that the Tanaic source quoted by the Gemara rules that lo teitzei, because by having her leave the second husband, that would be Zilusa de Beidina. But the Rashba says v'kosh Rashba di al korach lav taimo mishum Zilusa de Beidina hu. The ruling of Rav Nachman Reb Yosi of saying lo teitzei is not a function of our concern for the honor of the court. Deim Kane, if that were the consideration, afilu lo niseis elohi tiruha linosei tinosei. Even if she had not actually remarried after the first witnesses saying he was dead appeared, but even if she merely received permission to remarry, she would be able to act on that, to remarry, even if that wouldn't take place until after the second restrictive witnesses came in. And this is so, kidemashe b'chol asukya, de'ika zilusa, as is mashma throughout the sukya, that the concept of zilusa de beidina is a concept, the cheapening of the court is a concept that applies to a change in their ruling. And as a result, that there, we say there's iko zilusa afilu lo nase maise. Even if an actual marriage had not taken place that we would be reversing, but merely reversing a ruling would constitute zilusa de beidina. V'chiteimo di'in hochinami v'niseis de komar hainu shetiru alinosei v'shuv lo teitse mehetera horishon. If you're going to say that's really what happened over here, that Rav Nachman Reb Yosi who says nisei sviachak bo'edim arezu lo teitse, is she received a heter for nisuin, even if witnesses saying that he's still alive show up before she actually got remarried, she would still be able to get remarried. Why? Because of Zilusa de Beidina. Well, if that's the case, namely, that we're interpreting the expression niseis as meaning receiving permission to remarry, well then, the other case, de bo eidim v'achakach niseis, that was the, we'll say, the other case, the first case presented, where first both sets of witnesses had appeared. Bo eidim is a reference to the second set of witnesses saying that husband is not dead, and then it says v'achakach niseis, and then that happened. How do you explain the expression v'achakach niseis over there? And in that case, of course, the ruling was teitse. How do you explain the word niseis in that case? It's the same word in the same source, but just referring to a different case. How do you explain the word niseis over there? Lo motzi lefushi hitinua li nosei. In a case like that, where both sets of witnesses had appeared, and then viachar kach niseis, you can't possibly say that the word niseis there means she received a heter to remarry. No court would have given her a heter to remarry if it's taking place after the restrictive witnesses showed up. Ela niseis mamish. The word niseis there has to mean she actually got married. The al-kochuch, and you have to say that in the case of niseis v'achar kach bo'edim, why do we say lo teitze? Taimo de misfeiko lo mafki lo mibal. Lo mishum zilusa. The reason for ruling lo teitze in the case, in the case of niseis v'achar bo'edim, is because we don't separate women from their husbands when the separation would be out of a state of doubt. But our lack of acting, our lack of separating them, is not out of concern for Zilusa de Beidino. Up till here, then, is the Rashba's question. And the heart of the question is that if Zilusa de Beidino was the basis of his ruling, Harezu lo teitze, that would have had relevance even to a case of hitirua loses. But the Rashba demonstrated that the term niseis in this context, in this source, means actual remarriage. So why then is the Gemara citing Rav Nachum, Rav Yossi, and his ruling as an illustration of concern for Zilusa de Beidino, when that's not the consideration? The Hare Zo Lo Teitze ruling was because of Misveko Lo Mafkinon. The Tosfos answers V'yesh Lomar Li'olam Taimo Mishum Zilusa. The reason for the Lo Teitze of Rav Nachum, Rav Yossi was, yes, out of concern for the honor of the court. V'davka kishenises v'achar kach bo'edim iko zilusa de beidino. Now, Tosis gets involved with a very, refined, delicate explanation of when does zilusa de beidino apply, when is it a consideration, and when not. There would be Zilusa de Beidina only in a case where she first got married, and then the restrictive witnesses show up. There you have Zilusa de Beidina, if we were to separate her from the second husband. Why? Shekvar nesra l'chola oilam kevon sheniseis. Once she married the second husband, she's now a married woman and therefore prohibited to everyone else. Nimtza ma shechizrin l'osra lo'ed sheniseis lo. If we were to separate her from the one that she married, the one that she married was the witness that testified that she was free to marry because her husband died. That was the one that she married, one of those two witnesses. If we're going to now separate her from him, what we are essentially declaring in our in the court's reversal is, now you are prohibited to this man, to this individual. So a court ruling that is done to, let's say, to create or to impose restriction on one person a whole change in court ruling because of one individual, that would constitute a cheapening of the court, a zilusa de beidina. Avol, in bo edim kodem shenises, if the restrictive witnesses came before she got married, leko zilusa. What should we say is the order of events? First witnesses came saying that the husband is dead. That would enable her to remarry. Then witnesses saying that he's not dead. That creates doubt. She hasn't remarried in the interim. Then afterwards she might get married. If that is the order of events, leka zilusa, there is no cheapening. The al korchach tzrichin lachzor mehetero harishon. With the appearance of the restrictive witnesses before she married anyone, we have to reverse the original ruling of heter. The ruling of heter that arose with the appearance of the first set saying that he was dead. At that point, she was permitted to marry anyone she wants. With the appearance of the second witnesses, we prohibit her to everybody. That's what Tosis is meaning, refers to when he says that after the second set of witnesses, i.e. the restrictive witnesses, show up, we now prohibit her. If by telling us now that, hey, you know, you can't marry anybody, and included in those people happen to be also one of the original witnesses, that is not a reversal of opinion for the sake of creating prohibition for only one person. It's a reversal of an original heter which would have allowed her to marry anyone, now to restrict her from marrying anybody, including one of those first witnesses. That reversal, a reversal for the sake of a ruling of restriction that will apply to the masses, that would not be a zilusa the beidina, a reversal for the sake of a mass or public type restriction. We continue now on to the Tosfosin that are relevant to Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. The first place is Dibur Masel, V'Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Divri Akol, in Aror Pochos Mishnayim. This is found in the Gemara at the top line of Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. It was pointed out that in the case of the issue of the Kashrus of the Kayin, he was found to be after there was a curl that disqualified him, and then one witness came in and said that he's kosher, and then there were those that challenged him. The ones that were challenging, Rabbi Yochanan says, you cannot have an error of just one, you have to have two in order to disqualify. This was the Gemara's attempt to reject the first suggestion that maybe the point of difference in the Tanoi between Rebbe Elazar and Shulam Leo was how we would view the Iur of an individual. No, that's not the point of difference. As Rabbi Yochanan says, you divrei akol ein Iur pochos mishnayim. V'nira l'ri the Rabbi Yochanan ikur dvorov ahach mishne itmar. Rabbi Yochanan, in saying in Ein Iur Pochos Mishnayim, was actually said with regard to this Tanaic source, the source dealing with Ein Malin Kun Al Pi Echad, the source that appeared at the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. For Hadikomar Divrei Hakol, that which Rabbi Yochanan made a sweeping statement, everyone holds. Hainu, who's the everyone? It's a reference to Reb Shimon Gamliel, Reb Elazar, the two Tanoim that appeared at the end of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. De'ayru ba'orin. They were discussing the issue of orin. So Rabbi Yochanan said regarding all those that discuss orin, namely Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon Leo, there's no disagreement as far as the minimum number required to constitute orin, to constitute a challenge that would have to be reckoned with. Ulahachi lo komishani hacha, and as a result, the Gemara here doesn't answer. Now, we have to just pause for a moment. We say lo mishani means it, the Gemara doesn't answer. That means there was a question. Well, there was a question in the Gemara, namely, how could you think that Yur Chad Iko Binayu, how could you think that that would be a point of difference? Let's go over that last point. In our Gemara, after suggesting that maybe the point of difference between the Tanoim is Irur Chad, the Gemara asks, well, how can you say that? Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan say that L'divrei HaKol Ein Irur Pochos Mishnayim? Based on the Gemara in Kiddushin, maybe one could have said as follows. Hani Mili Hechop Deiko Chazoka Dekashus. When is it that we say Ein Irur Pochos Mishnayim? That's when the challenge is to someone that has a known previous status of kashrus. Abel hecho deleko chazoka de kashrus lo omar. But where the challenge is with regard to someone that didn't have a previous known status of kashrus, there Rabbi Yochanan's point wouldn't have been said. Kidim mishani beberek asor yuchsin. That distinction, namely Iko Chazoka de Kashrus versus Leko de Chazoka de Kashrus, was in fact used as an answer in the last parak of Kiddushin, parak Asur Yuchsin, Gabi, regarding the case of a midwife who was present in the birth of several women, and one woman was married to a Kohen, another woman married to someone that is not a Kohen, and there the midwife that was present, Nemenes Chaya, Chaya is a midwife, Lomar Zekayin. In that sugya, the distinction between Iko Chazoka de Kashrus versus Leko Chazoka de Kashrus was used as a response to the question of, didn't Rabbi Yochanan say, Ein Irur Pochos Mishnayim? So, over there, Enochinami, Rabbi Yochanan's comment of Ein Irur Pochos Mishnayim would have relevance only in a case where there was a Chazoka de Kashrus. So why in our Gemara do we, when the Gemara says, raises as a question, well, didn't Rabbi Yochanan say Ein Irur Pochos Mishnayim, doesn't that apply only in restrictive cases, namely Iko de Chazoka de Kashrus? So Tosfos is saying that that distinction has no relevance over here. Why not? Da amasnisen dehacha koi. Rabbi Yochanan, when he made his remark, Ein Irur Pochos Mishnayim, he was referring to these Tanoim, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shulam Leo. And as far as these specific Tanoim are concerned, they don't make a distinction between Hechadika Chazoka versus Hechadaleka Chazoka. In all cases, even in a case where the challenge is to an individual that doesn't have a previous known Chazoka Kashrus, the challenge will not be reckoned with unless there are two. Ein Irur Pochos Mishnayim. V'im tomar, kevan damasnisen dahacha koi. Well, if Rabbi Yochanan's comment of Ein Yira Brachos Mishnayim was said only in light of these two Tanoim. It was in other words, it was a type of local remark focused on these two Tanoim. Well, and if that's the case, Eichi Torich Minei Hosam Ubeperekama Degitin. Why would you then ask from Rabbi Yochanan on Sugyas in the first parak of Gittin, and also in the sugya that we just cited from Kiddushin? Those were sugyas that did not feature these specific tanoim. And that being the case, Rabbi Yochanan's comment of Ein Yira Brachos Mishnayim would really have no relevance. Dilma, Hodekom Rabbi Yochanan Ein Yira Brachos Mishnayim. Maybe that which Rabbi Yochanan says, Ein Yira Brachos Mishnayim, Hainu Mishum, Deika Eid Echod Demachshir. Maybe it's because the Yira is coming on the heels of a previous singular witness that was machshir, like in our Gemara, in the case where Reb Lozer and Reb Shulam Leal had appeared. And that's, we'll say, once again, we're going to say it's a very specific situation, which was not the case in those other Gemaras. So why bring in Reb Yochanan as a basis for asking a question to other sugyas where he would seem to have no relevance? V'yesh lomar, da gemora yoda, de Rabbi Yochanan mayri kide masik. Rabbi Yochanan was speaking, as we continue in our Gemara, as we conclude in our Gemara, Kedemasik means as the description of the Kohen story continued and unfolded, the Yotza Olav Koyol Shu Ben Grusha. We were dealing with an individual who we knew his father was a Kohen, but the word went out that his father married a divorcee. V'achakach bo eid echo de machshir Lahosir Hakoil, and then a singular witness came to reinstate, to remove the murmurings, the Koil. Fiosu Beitre, and then two more came in to disqualify him. Ubechi Haigavna Omra Byochanon Dien Irupochus Mishnayim. It was under these circumstances that Rabbi Yochanan said, Ein Yira Brachos Mishnayim. V'af agav di'ed echod she'ichshir v'hakul kelesnu domi. Even though the singular witness that was machshir and the kul that had previously disqualified are, we'll say, are considered having canceled each other out, it's as if they're kelesnu, as if they're not here. They're not around. And how do we know that? Sharei ha'eid gorua min ha'koil. In general, a singular witness is weaker than the strength of mere murmurings. Im lo ha'chazoka. If not for the fact that the singular witness was coupled with the previous known status of the father, that he had been a Kohen. And how, and in other words, there's a certain weakness to the Eid Echot. Shemei HaKoil Poisel. A Koil has the strength of rendering unfit. For Eid Eino Poisel, a singular witness that comes out of the blue to disqualify wouldn't be reckoned with at all. So that what we thought was that the Ein Yira Brachos Mishnayim in developing the question, by the way, use the diamond markings that you see in our Mark Tesis. Above, we thought that the statement of Rabbi Yochanan of Ein Yira Brachos Mishnayim might have been limited to a case where their disqualification was coming on the heels of the testimony of a singular witness that was machshir. In other words, a singular witness that's machshir, you need strong testimony power i.e. not less than two, to counter that. Ah, but Tosfos answers, the appearance of that one witness that was machshir was really, let's see, in halachic, conceptually, being on the heels of a kail that disqualified. That one witness was considered canceled out, dissolved. He was a non-issue. He was a non-contender. You didn't need to draft heavy cannons in order to knock out that singular witness, because, as we just said, that singular witness was really canceled out by the kail. And nevertheless, two witnesses were required. So we see that the comment of Rabbi Yochanan, "Ein Yira Pochus Mishnayim," is a concept, a necessity, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, even in cases where we are not running up against a counterforce represented by a singular witness. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil Ein. This Dibur HaMaschil Ein Yira Pochus Mishnayim relates to the Gemara two lines from the top. And once again, we're referring to Rabbi Yochanan that we just spoke about at length. An ear is not less than two. Lo bo la fuke lo ein echad. This comment is only to exclude what we said just now in the previous Tosfos, that a singular witness is not able to disqualify. Only if you have two witnesses can you disqualify. However, aval kail poisel. However, a kail murmurings, public murmurings, that still remains as something that could passel. And the observation of ein ira pochus mishnayim doesn't come to exclude the possibility of a kail also being a source of challenge to kashrus. We continue with the next Tosfos, Dibur HaMaschil V'Nofak. This refers to the Gemara four lines from the top, V'Nofak Olei Kola V'Achtine. That was, of course, with the Kohen case, a Kohen that we knew who his father was was himself a Kohen. And then a murmurings went out, a kail went out, that he was that the Kohen that we're focusing on was a Ben Grusha, because that father, who we knew was a Kohen, had married a Grusha. The Gemara said, after the murmurings, v'achtine. Later, after that, of course, the singular witness that came in said he was kosher, we reinstated him. At this point, though, that the Gemara says, v'achtine, lav dafka achtine. It doesn't mean an actual removal or disqualification from Kahuna through a formal court ruling. Ela klomar memela yorad. On his own, we'll say, he stopped representing himself as a Kohen. D'i dafka achtine, if it were a specific formal disqualification on the part of the court, amai askine, then why, with the appearance of the singular witness, would we have reinstated him? V'ha ikazi lusa de bedina, that would constitute a cheapening of the court's ruling. Veleka lemeimar leka zelusa ela kishehridu sheheridoi shnei pavim. And you cannot say that the issue of Zilusa de Beidina arises only in a case of a second court reversal. The Bishmaitse Mukach, from our Sukya, it's clear, the Afilu Bechada Zimna Ika Zilusa, even one reversal would constitute a Zilusa de Beidina. So the Tosis up till this point is telling us that the disqualification that came initially on the heels of the Koyol wasn't a formal court ruling. Because if it was, then upon the appearance of the first singular witness saying kosher, we wouldn't have reinstated him. That would have constituted Zilusa de Beidina. So then, what was that initial disqualification that came on the heels of the Kohen? That was Mimela. The Kohen himself, he disqualified himself because of the murmurings. Inami Horoda Gemura Komar. Another approach is that in fact the demotion of the Kohen from Kahuna status initially was Hayroda Gemura, a full formal disqualification, Veleka Zilusa de Beidina, and still there is no Zilusa de Beidina through that we were machshir him with the appearance of that singular witness, that still wouldn't have been called a zilusa de beidina. Elohecha dehoridu al yedei edus. When would zilusa de beidina figure in? When the court ruling was based on formal testimony. Avo b'hirada shayidei hakil leka zilusa. And however, in contrast to a formal court ruling, however, that was based on merely a kail, the reinstating of the kain would not constitute a zilusa de beidina. So according to the first approach, the fact that a mere court ruling would have demoted him, that would have set into motion right away the possibility of Zilusa Bedina through the reinstatement. According to the second approach, it's not the formal court ruling that would have been reversed, but it would have been a formal court ruling based on actual testimony that would be then reversed, that would constitute Zilusa Bedina, as opposed to a formal court ruling that was based on mere murmurings. We continue with the next thesis, Dibur Masnil Ve'osa, based on the Gemara, five lines from the top. Ve'osa Chad Sado Ve'as Kine. As the events unfolded with regard to the Kohen, Kohen had been removed by the Koyel, reinstated by a singular witness, saying that he's kosher, and then two witnesses came and said that he is he's not kosher. And after that, a singular witness came that enabled us to say that said that he was kosher. Let me just for the sake of accuracy. This thesis, the also chatzan of Askine, is relevant to the Gemara six lines from the top. The afogav the aminu beperek hamagarish. Even though we say in the in that perek of Maseches Gittin, the lo mevatlin kola, Gabi Grusha Lekayin. We don't void or cancel murmurings with regard to the case which involves a word went out concerning a woman that she is a divorcee, and by labeling her as a grusha, she would be prohibited to the kahuna. And the Gemara there says that murmurings, rumors that go out labeling a woman a grusha, which would have ramifications with regard to her ability to marry a kohen, namely she cannot marry a kohen if she were in fact a real grusha. So we're not mevatel the kohel. Why there are we, let's say, concerned with not being mevatel the kohel? That by is in contrast with our Gemara, where we saw a singular witness coming on the heels of a kohel, and we were mevatel the kohel. Why then this difference? Mishum deis le takona, because in the case of that which is in Gittin, the grusha kohen issue, she has other options. Even if she's labeled a grusha, she doesn't have to marry a kohen. She can marry someone else. Aval hacha, with regard to labeling someone as being a kosher lekuhn or not, dilo masikna le posel yoylam. If we don't reinstate him to the kuna, he remains unfit permanently. Total disqualification. Well, in a case like that, where the issue is, if you accept the koil, you'll have total loss. Mivatlin, in a case like that, then we will be mivatel the koil. Inami, another possibility in understanding why over here we're willing to mevatel the kohel, is betruma derabonon hekilu. When we learned the Gemara, we pointed out that the issue of the kuna was, depending on if you accept the Rashbam's approach, matters that affect not only truma, but avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, and also birkas kehanim. Those are doraisa concerns. The Rabbeinu Gershom pointed out that the issue of the kuna concerning is eating of truma. Tosfos seems to limit the case of the kohen to the kasher of the kohen to his being able to eat truma nowadays, truma de rabbanan, meaning truma that exists only on a rabbinic level. So since the issue of the kahuna and reinstating him is only, I will say, a relatively speaking minor issue, we will mevatel the kohel that had disqualified him. In the case of the issue of a grusha to a kohen, which is a doraisa level concern, there we're not so quick, so to speak. We are not mevatel the kohel. We don't go out of our way to cancel the rumor. My apologies regarding the location of this Dibur Masl. In fact, it is relating to the Gemara 5 lines from the top, as we said at the outset. At this point, we turn our attention to the next Tosfos, and it's the last Tosfos of today's Shiur, Tosfos Dibur Masl Anan, the last Tosfos of, as we said, for the Gemara that we learned with regard to today's Shiur, last Tosfos on the Omid, on Lamed Beis, Omid Aleph. This refers to the Gemara 13 lines from the bottom. The analysis of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel regarding the kahuna issue. He said, Anan Achtinon, Vanan Maskinon, Lizilusa de Beidina Lo Chashinon. This, I should point out, just by way of reference to the Gemara, was at the second stage of the analysis of the Machlokas Panoyim, after we said that everyone holds we're Metzarif the Edim, the singular witnesses that said that the Kohen was kosher, then the result was, according to Shulman Leo, after the two first witnesses that appeared as two witnesses disqualified, upon the appearance of the second singular witness, we will reinstate. And even though it looks like the court is a yo-yo, that is not going to stop us from reinstating him as a Kohen. What is the mechanism that enables us to say that? So Tosha says, the uki trey bahadi trey, you pit two against two. You had two witnesses disqualifying, two witnesses being machshir. They cancel each other out. The uki gavra achazoke the muhsuk lon the oviv kayen hu. And the Kohen in question can enjoy the status of his father. Of course, Kuna passes down from father to son, and assume then that he, the fellow in question, is like his father, who was a known Kohen. Tosfos opens with now a long question. Before we continue with the rest of the Tosfos, we have a little introduction we call the Taktzir. Ha'im cheskas hakashrus shel ha'hore mo'il la'yeled. In fact, does the known kosher status of a parent have can that serve as benefit for the child? That obviously is an issue that we just touched on, and this has relevance to cases involving mothers and their children, where a mother was known to have a kosher status, and the issue is, can we apply that status of acceptability to the child? We speak about women, so we're talking about, are they considered kosher and able to marry even kehanim or not? Another issue, maha geder shel trei utrei. When we speak about pitting two against two, what halachic status appears after you had trei utrei? Does that create a safek, sfeika de rabbanan? Does that create a situation of doubt that exists on a rabbinic level? Or possibly it creates a safek d'oraisa? Now we turn to the continuation of the Tosfos. Again, we noted a long question, the Tema. The Amrinon, the Perek HaOmer B'Kiddushin, in the third Perek of Kiddushin, Gabi Yanai HaMelech, regarding that individual that was a king that reigned in the latter part of the second Beis HaMikdash period. He preceded Hordus or Herod by, it would appear like two generations, but we're nevertheless at the latter part of the second Beis HaMikdash. V'yivukash, it says regarding Yanai Melech and his, we'll say his kashrus vis-a-vis the kahuna, he descended from the Beis Hashmonai, and the Beis Hashmonai were kehanim. The issue came up, was he kosher as a Kohen? V'yivukash v'lo nimsa. It was researched, was sought out, and it was not found, like the murmurings suggested, it was not found that his mother had been in fact a captive woman. If a woman is taken captive by heathens and then subsequently released, she is considered disqualified from the kuna. She cannot marry a Kohen. Yanai's father, we mentioned he was a descendant from the Hasmonean household, his father was a Kohen. He married, the father married a woman, concerning which there was some, we'll say, doubt or controversy whether she had been taken captive or not. And if she had been taken captive, let's say in definitive terms, then she would not have been allowed to marry the Kohen. A woman taken captive by heathens, we suspect that she was a participant in intimacy, and intimacy with a non-Jew disqualifies a woman from marrying a Kohen. The issue concerning Yanai's mother was, as we said, the issue came up. It was sought out. They researched the matter of Alon Insa, and it was not found that she was a, that she in fact was a captive woman. Heichi Domi. Well, what are the circumstances? Ilema the Trey Amri Ishtaboy with Trey Amri Lo Ishtaboy. If it's a case that two had said she was taken captive, and two other witnesses said she was not taken captive. Trey Utrey Ninhu. That would be a case of two against two. My choses de samchis ahani, smoch ahani, v'amai lo nimtza. Why rely, if it's a case of two against two, why rely on those that are matir her to the kuna? Why not rely on those that prohibit her to the kuna? Why would the Gemara say, lo nimtza, it was not found that she should be prohibited? That's what you see in the Gemara in the third parak of Kiddushin. V'hashto, but in light of what we have said before, my kaporech, what's the basis of raising the suggestion that we should be restrictive on Yanai? Adarabo, islon lemeimar uki trei bahadi trei. Based on what we said before regarding our Kohen, and we had the two verses two regarding his kashrus, and we said we reinstate him based on the chazok of his father. Apply the same thing over there too in the case of Yanai. We should have said uki trei badi trei v'uki gavra chazoke, and allow the person in question to enjoy the previous known status. And allow Yanai to benefit from the chazok of his mother as a non-captive. In other words, when you have a Jewish woman, knowing nothing else, she has the status of being kosher to the kuna. She has the status of being lo ishtaboy. Why then does the Gemara there say that after you pit the two against two, the suggestion was, why are you allowing him to the kuna? We should be machmir. Not so. We are saying here by the Kohen case, you pit the two against two and allow him to benefit the chazok of his father. Why not let Yanai benefit from the chazok of his mother of being lo ishtaboy? Upiresh hasam bekuntris. Rashi, there in Maseches Kiddushin, says, you want to know why the Gemara was suggesting to be machmir by Yanai? The cheskas ha'ein lo mahanya lahachshir es Yanai. The chazoka of the mother doesn't serve to benefit Yanai. L'fishein eidin boyim lifsol ha'ein l'kuna. The witnesses there that say, that came to testify, their purpose was not to say testimony concerning the disqualification of the mother marrying a Kayin, Elohoyed al Yanai. Their purpose was to come and testify regarding Yanai. And I think we should point out, Yanai did not have a Chazoka de Kashrus. Since we're talking about Yanai's status from the point of birth, similar to what was mentioned before in Tosfos on Lamed Aleph on the Beis at the end of Dibur Maskil for Rav Nachman. Ubeka, and with that in mind, it's not similar to our sugya where there is a cheskas of kashrus talking about a person who was born to a father that had a known kosher status. Yanai as soon as he was born, the doubt arose. So he couldn't have have benefit from the chazalka. That's Rashi's explanation. However, v'einira l'ri. The Ri doesn't like Rashi's explanation. He rejects that. Deloma lo yoel cheskaso aim leben. Why do you say that the chazok of the mother doesn't help for the son? Hoyel v'eino yochol lios shateo aim kshero im lo ye aben kosher. You can't separate the two. You can't have a situation of describing the woman as kosher if the child is not also kosher. And so the Ri is taking issue with Rashi, who tried to separate the cheskas aim from the status of the vlad. The oid the hocha afagav the al haben meidim lepaslo. In our case, even though the witnesses are coming to testify to disqualify the Kohen, the son of a Kohen, Mehanyole Cheska So'av Mahshiro. This point was mentioned earlier. There was a Cheska So'av that was mentioned in the Gemara itself, three lines from the top. The point, by the way, of the Cheskas Aim, the Cheskas Av as benefiting him, we saw that that the singular witness who was Mevatel the Koil had strength or had benefit only because it was he was coupled with the Cheskas Av that's mentioned in the Tosus. Before Dibra Maskel of Viha Omar. So Tosus continues with the second question that he has on the Pirusha Kuntris, is that we see even though the witnesses are coming to disqualify the son, that particular son is able to benefit from the chazaka of the father. And being that that's the case, so then why, once again, by Yanai, can we not say that even though the witnesses aren't coming to disqualify the mother, they're coming to disqualify the son, let him benefit from the chazaka of the mother of Lo Ishtaboi? Why then does the Gemara in Kiddushin, in relating to Yanai, say, oh, how can you say v'yukash adover v'lo nimtza, when you can say uki trey babi trey, and be machmir, let the two cancel each other out, and be machmir, and say, and once again, why do you say then that the Yuvukash of Alonimsa, it's not found that he should be Usser? It's understandable why he should be found Usser. As far as Rashi's explanation, though, we don't understand, says the Ri, why that would be good enough reason to suggest that he should be Usser. But rather, like we're saying in the question, the Gemara there shouldn't have said that we should consider him usser. Do you not have all of the, we'll say, the benefits of what we see here in our Gemara? V'yesh lomar. I should say, correction. V'nira l'ri. Dahainu taimo. This is the reason why in Kiddushin, the Gemara figured we should be machmir on Yanai, And we saw that in the words of the Gemara. How when the Gemara had asked its question of Heichidami, and the Gemara said, if it's two against two, we should be machmir on Yanai. So he re-says, Hainu taimo mishum de maskinu beperek dalet achin de chol trey utrey havyo sveika de rabbonon. In Maseches Yevomis, the Gemara arrives at the conclusion that when you have two witnesses against two witnesses, that creates a doubt. It's a doubt that's to the level of a doubt on a rabbinic level. V'ho'eim nami, the mother of Yanai, also have yisfeka de rabbonon. There was an issue of, if you say two said she was taken captive and two said she was not taken captive, you've created a sfeika de rabbonon. Ulahachi porachosam, and that's why over there in Kiddushin the Gemara asks, smoch ahani, why not rely on those that aser her, that declare her as a shivuya? You know, if the case of Yanai was Trey versus Trey, then we will suggest we should rely on those that aser her. Dinehi demidoraiso aminon uki Trey badi Trey for uki itzo achazoka. Even though on a Torah level we'd say we'd pit two against two and establish the woman on her chazok of kashrus, mikol mokoi midrabbonon yesh leposlo. Thus, on a rabbinic level, we should disqualify her. V'hacha, in our sugya, le'inyan truma derabbonon hikilu la'tiro bo. Betray utray v'ukme achazoka. Since we're dealing with a topic that itself is a rabbinic topic, you've created then through trey versus trey a sofek concerning a rabbinic issue, and we will allow him to benefit from the cheskas avose, the chazoka of his father. V'ha di Omar Liel. Tosfos is making reference now to the Gemara Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, 14 lines from the top. Shnayim Omrim Meis, Shnayim Omrim Lo Meis. Regarding the woman who we knew was a married woman, two witnesses say that the husband died, which would free her to marry anyone. Two witnesses say, no, he didn't die. V'chulei Avol Niseis v'achakach bo edim. In the continuation of that source, 14 lines from the bottom of the Gemara, if she got married, v'achakach bo edim lo teitze, and then witnesses say that he is still alive, but she married before they showed up. The source ruled. Rav Nachman Rav Yossi ruled that she does not have to leave the second husband. Afagav de trey utrey sveika de rabbonon hi. Even though, as we said before, when you have two against two, it creates a suffix on a rabbinic level. Umidoraisa, however, on a doraisa level, and we're dealing with the issue of marital status, that is a doraisa issue. Is lon de ukma a chazoka davyeshes ish. We would ostensibly have to relegate her to her original status of being a married woman. And she should, in fact, have to leave the second husband, even if the second husband happened to have been one of the original witnesses that said the first husband died. Meaning, even though from the couple's standpoint, they don't have a doubt, but it's a case of trey utrey, two against two, creating a suffix on a merely rabbinic level, and on, as we said, on a Torah level, we throw back to the previous known chazoka, the previous known status, namely married woman. Here you have a married woman, and and marrying a second man. That can't be. Omer Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam has to explain, how is it that when she got married and then two restricting witnesses showed up afterwards, she can remain with her second husband? Because the Asya Chazoka de Daiko Mitzvah, there's another Chazoka that we have referred to in the past, namely a Chazoka, there's a known behavior of women that before they marry a second husband, they will be very scrupulous and thorough in their checking whatever happened to the first husband. And if she's willing to marry a second husband, she must have checked out thoroughly and established that the first husband died. So knowing that there is that chazaka of Daiko Mintzaba, that comes along Umaro and weakens Cheskas Eishasish. That weakens the other chazaka, the other previously known status that she had of being a married woman. So Daiko Mintzaba cancels or weakens or cancels that particular chazaka, and with that we understand why she's able to remain with the second husband. Vim toimar ki iko shnei edim lo daiko. You might say, how is it that you say that the woman is daiko mitzvah when you have two witnesses that testify that he is dead? That, by the way, is that's in contrast to the, we'll say, the well-known case of a woman who on her own comes along and says, my husband is dead. If she does that, we allow her to marry someone else based on Isha Daiko Mintzaba. But she wouldn't risk it, so to speak, unless she checked it out thoroughly. However, in a case where there are two witnesses that say he's dead, and on their word she remarries, in a case like that, she's not necessarily going to be so thorough. Why? Why is she not going to be so thorough? You might ask, so then why, in the other case where she on her own comes and says he is dead, we allow her to remarry because of Daiko Mintzaba? Well, that's because if the first husband shows up, you know what happens? We prohibit her from remaining with the second husband, and we do not allow her to go back to the first husband either. So she has everything to lose and nothing to gain. However, in the case of a woman who remarries, not based on her own word, but based on the testimony of two witnesses, the halach is different. There, as Tosfos says, as he quotes the Gemara, the lekach chomer b'sofa, the stringency that we would have applied at the end of the story doesn't apply in that case. Namely, that we would prohibit her to go back to the first husband. That's not true. Kidoma v'isha rabo, where, as it says in Maseches Yevomis, Niseis shelo b'shus mutaris lachzor loy. The Gemara uses an expression of Niseis shelo b'shus. And it says that if she remarried shelo b'shus, she's allowed to go back to her first husband if he shows up. What does that mean, shelo b'shus? Hainu sheniseis b'edim. Shelo b'shus means her remarriage was without the permission of Beis Din. She didn't need the permission of Beis Din. She had two witnesses that said that the first husband is dead. She then married a second husband. In the event that the first husband comes back, the halacha states she can go back to the first one. We view it like a case of oinus. It's like a case of oinus means something beyond her control, like a case of a married woman that's raped. She's allowed to go, raped is oinus. She's allowed to go back to her first, to her husband. So too, in a case of a woman marrying based on the testimony of two witnesses, there's nothing stronger than that in halacha. Two witnesses testifying that he's dead. She, of course, took the liberty of remarrying without checking things out. And she, and we associate with that case she's not going to check out, because when she marries based on the word of two witnesses, in the worst case scenario, she has nothing to lose. She can go back to her first husband. So how can you say that the woman in our discussion has a cheskas daiko mintzaba, which weakens her cheskas ish, eishes ish, when she's not daiko mitzvah, as we just described. A woman who gets married based on the testimony of two witnesses is not daiko mitzvah. V'yesh lomar, hayol umakhishim ze'ezeh. Since in our sukkah, in our Gemara, we spoke about a woman who remarried based on the word of two witnesses saying that the husband is dead, but two more witnesses showed up saying he's still alive. And because of that, ikah chumra im tamoid tachas baila betaynis bori shala. We will apply the chumra if she continues to remain with the second husband. Here you now have heard that the first husband, that now you've heard with the appearance of these second witnesses, you now heard that he's still alive. And what, are you, you're going to continue staying with the second husband? Well, if he comes back, we're not going to let you go back to the first husband. So because Chumra does exist over here, she will be Daika Uminsiba. V'im tomar, Shnayim Oimrim Nizgarsha, Ushnayim Oimrim Loi Nizgarsha. Up till now, we've been focusing on the case of two witnesses saying that the husband died. Here we have the case also featured in the source on Lamed Aleph on the Beis. Two witnesses saying that she was divorced. Two other witnesses saying she was not divorced. Amai lo teitse benisei svachak bo edim. Why, in that case where two witnesses showed up saying that she had been divorced, and on their word, she married a second husband, and then two more witnesses come say she was not divorced, and we saw in the source, she doesn't leave the second husband. Well, in that case, the holo daiko, there's no issue, she doesn't have the benefit of a daiko mitzvah. So what we in fact have is a case of a sofek that has arisen, because you have two against two, and we have her previous cheskas eishes ish, and we don't have a counterweight of daiko mitzvah. The dafka b'meisu de daika. It's only in the case where it's an issue of her first husband having died that we introduce the idea, the phenomenon of women being very scrupulous before they remarry. She yoreya shemo yovo. She would be afraid that the first husband might come back fully alive. The Eidua Kol Shalomais, and everyone would then reveal, would show everyone know he didn't die. And therefore, when she says he died, we believe her, because otherwise she wouldn't be taking chances, because she'll be exposed as a total fraud if he were to in fact show up. The Eino Nemenes Lomar Nizgarsha. In contrast to the case of saying my husband died, where we do believe the woman, a woman who says I was divorced is not something concerning which we would believe her. In other words, if you have a woman that you know was a married woman and she comes and tells us I have been divorced, we don't go on her word. If she's not in front of her husband saying you divorced me, but she comes to us telling us I have been divorced, she is not believed. When it's not directly in front of her husband, she will be brazen and bold to tell us something other than the facts. Furthermore, we have two witnesses that said she was divorced, all the more reason she'll feel a sense of security and remarry and put in the claim based on what they're saying that I have been divorced, when in fact maybe she wasn't. She would be mayish, she would be so bold deny her being married. So, in the last few lines, Tosis introduced the question: why is it then that in the case of a woman who got remarried based on two witnesses saying that she had been divorced, why is it that after the two other witnesses, the restrictive witnesses, come on the scene, is she able to remain with her second husband? Do you not have a suffix about what her status is? And there's an original chazoka beishas ish. V'yesh lomar, d'le'inyin hochi daika umara cheskes eishas ish, d'le'olam yorea shema yuzmu o yivsulum begazlonus. Contrary to what we said in developing the question, that the woman has a sense of security in the witnesses that say she was divorced and relies on them to the extent that she would be mazed upon them to say that she was divorced when not so. She has a lingering fear in the back of her mind that the witnesses that said she was divorced might be shown to be zaymimim, liars, or shown to be disqualified as thieves. So she's not going to put all her eggs in that basket, so to speak, of the witnesses. And, well, then why, if she's not totally reliant on those witnesses because of these built-in fears, why was she then, based on what did she remarry? Well, daika umitzvah. So that chazoka does exist, even in the case of Nizgarsha. V'im tomar. Here, Tosfos focuses let's call it a separate point, even though in the general scheme of things, this matter is connected, but it superficially, at the first read through, it appears to be like a separate point. Tosfos here is focusing on the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Pei Ches. And the Gemara there goes through several stages of analysis. And the intomar lemai de lo yoda. Regarding the Gemara in Yevamos, before the Gemara reached the conclusion, the ba'omer bori li airi, that the marriage took place with a mindset of her and the husband being certain that the first husband is dead, referring to the case where two witnesses say that the first husband died and she got married on their word, and in fact she got married to one of those two witnesses, and then two more came say he's still alive. The ruling is she does not leave the second husband, and the Gemara asks, how can we matir her to stay with the second husband? Each act of intimacy that they conduct is a matter of doubt. It's trey. There's a matter of doubt, and the Gemara there says that in a case where you're involved with an act of doubtful intimacy, one would bring an osham tolui. It's called a suspended guilt offering. That's a korban that's brought when there's a doubt concerning a matter that if there was certain violation, one would bring a korban chatas. Tosfos over here asks, why is it that the Gemara in Yevamos doesn't say that each act of intimacy actually results in a chatos? Why a chatos? Did we not say a moment ago that the osham tolui is brought when there's a matter of doubt? Is there not a matter of doubt over here? Why are you then suggesting that the Gemara there should say that each act of intimacy would be mechayev a korban chatos? So the reason for that, for Tosfos is making this suggestion, is that since the case involves trey u trey, two against two, and up till now we've said that creates a suffix derabbanan, but on a Torah level we would label the winner, describe the woman based on her previous known status, her chazaka of eshes ish, and if their acts are done b'shogeg, in other words, they don't know the halacha, they're not aware of this, but there is certain intimacy taking place, that would be grounds for a korban chatas to be brought, not an osham toloi. So now we look at this in the text. We mentioned before, means where the woman says, I am certain that he is dead, and she married one of the witnesses that testified that he was dead. Bori li means that they have no doubt. But before the Gemara reaches that detail in describing the case of the treu trei, before it reaches that point, my ka'omar, why does the Gemara describe the relationship as he gufa va'asham tolu kaima? Even though the witness himself testifies that the husband died, well, she doesn't know. She's going on his, she's relying on what he's saying, but she herself doesn't know. And how can we allow them to remain together? Is it not so that each act of intimacy is with a, we'll call it a suffic eishes ish? She might be still an eishes ish. So Tosis himself points out, that each subsequent act of intimacy would result in a chatos, as we explained, that you have a case of trei utrei, two against two, creating a suffic derabbanan, but midoraisa, she's becheskas eishes ish, and as such, there isn't any doubt as to what her status is. She's a definite eishes ish because of the chazaka, and each act of intimacy that she commits should result in a separate sin offering, not an osham toloi. V'yesh lomar. So Tosfos answers, how is it that the Gemara in Yevamos is describing her as being under the realm of an osham toloi and not a chatos? The Porech, when the Gemara asks its question of he goof of osham toloi kaima, and how can we allow her continued living with the second husband, the Gemara's Porech afilu nomar de treu trei havi sveika de raisa. Even this, that Gemara is asking, even according to the opinion that says that there is a doubt on a Torah level. Kidapirsh be perek arba achin. Even if it's not a simple suffix to Rabbanan, which we said before that midoraisa, she is a vadei eishes ish, but she is a suffix doraisa, there's a doubt on a Torah level. Is she at all an eishes ish to begin with? Mikol makom, even so, ba'asham kaima, she still nevertheless would be obligated to bring a guilt offering, an asham toloi. The ain laharich, and it's not for us to continue elaborate anymore. But ksubis pirashi and maseches ksubis, I explained this matter. So just to repeat the last point, Tosfos will say justifies why the Gemara in Yevamos is asking how can she remain with the second husband when each act of intimacy will generate a sacrifice. The Gemara there said the sacrifice being generated is a mere asham toloi, and not as Tosfos had suggested it should be a chatas, and that's because the Gemara there is working with the idea that when you have trei utrei, two witnesses against two witnesses regarding her marital status, it creates a sofek doraisa. And a korban, the only kind of korban that you would bring in a case like that would be an asham toloi. A chatas is not brought when there is a matter of doubt, it's brought when there's a matter of certainty. It's only that the violator violated the certain act in a state of shogeg, where he wasn't aware that it was a prohibited act. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.